Echo Hotel. 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 Message 4437. 437. 92. Good. Attention. 437. 437. Echo Hotel.
Is it better stop the bleeding? She attacks, he defends, and the other way around. We forgot how to be friends. Colors change, winners go, and our best chances come and gone. Fires died, lightning struck, corners painted, guns were drawn. Singing songs of smothered notes, always in each other's hearts, always at each other's throats. Confide, confess, lied and guessed. I suppose we tried our best. Changing like we're summer moons. Once we fix each other's gazes and we lift each other's wounds. Can't get you out of my system. System. Did your damage, said your things. Things, the things. Sun that shines behind the clouds. Birds in cages spread their wings. Set it free, send me higher. Bleeding heart, deadly tired. Gently falling rain that kills the glowing flames of friendly fire.
Yes, ma'am. your opinion.
To the Insomnia Stream, Kosher Billionaire Edition. Kosher Billionaire Edition. I'm your host, of course, Devin Stack. Tonight we're going to talk about, well, I guess, a kosher billionaire. Or at least, sort of, I guess, in a way, in the imagination. I guess that's all it takes, really, for something to be true. If enough, it's like Bitcoin. Right? If enough people believe it's worth a certain amount, it's worth a certain amount. If enough people believe you're a billionaire, I guess. For all intents and purposes, you are a billionaire. Let's dive right in. Got a little story. Got a little story to tell. Involves this woman a little bit. This here is the author. This is the author of a book by the name. It's called Kosher Billionaire. Stacy Cohen. Not born a Jew, believe it or not. That's why she looks like like a goy. Because she started out in this world a goy and she converted so that she could have the love of a very special man. Tonight's star of the show, a very special man. This guy right here. I know what you're thinking. I know what you're thinking. This guy looks familiar. I know that guy. I know I've seen him before. And you're thinking to yourself, clearly this guy belongs with a girl like that, right? It must be true love. True love, because I know I've seen this guy before. He's famous. Right? So this fucking guy here. Mooley. His real name isn't Mooley Cohen, because that'd be kind of funny, right? Mooley Cohen. Yeah, not everyone's going to get that. The Italians out there, you guys will get it, right? Mooley Cohen. Samuel Mooley Cohen. Israeli born American. Because, you know, anyone can be American. Didn't you know that? Literally anyone can be American. Like last stream, we were looking at these Eastern European Jews, some of which who weren't born in America, just like Mooley here. He wasn't born in America. He didn't come until he was an adult. He was born in Israel, in fact. I think in like in the 1950s. Didn't come to America till 1987. When I believe he was about 30 years old. Now, his past is a little bit foggy. It's a little bit foggy. Why would an Israeli Jew, born in Israel, who served in the IDF, why would he want to come to America? What did he hope would happen? Who helped facilitate this? Not everyone can just move to America. I don't know, maybe it was because he was so successful, right? And maybe it was because of all the skills he learned working in the IDF.
The Israeli army was an experience. It's a 3 years experience. They teach you what integrity means. They teach you teamwork and teach you competitiveness. And it's strength, your inner ability to judge and make decisions in real time, which are very important in the business world. So I think it was a good experience, specifically when you're 18 years old and you go to 21 and you are still in a point of life that it's like a wine, you know? I mean, start to really get there. And for me, it was a good experience.
So maybe that's what it was, right? I mean, what he told people, it doesn't really make a lot of sense. But he told people that George H.W. Bush personally gave him citizenship. Because he was a millionaire. And it was this special millionaire citizenship thing. I don't know, I guess it's possible, right? If you use the Wayback Machine and try to find his early websites, you find weird shit like that indicate that perhaps he was a very wealthy man. For example, you know, he was part of Trading Dynamics, a supply chain software company that he sold in 1999. He worked for Biosense, a cardiac imaging company that sold to Johnson & Johnson in 1997. So, you know, this is all during the dot-com bubble, right? He's creating all these startups and selling them and making a ton of money. Or this one, for example, you know, Teva Pharmaceuticals. You know, Teva Pharmaceuticals, the company that makes all the tranny drugs and stuff. Teva Pharmaceuticals, Israeli pharmaceutical company, the largest generic drug company in the world. They actually knock off, they steal all the medications made by Western European companies, and they just, you know, repackage them. You see, in the early 90s, it said, this is his website. In the early 90s, Mr. Cohen bought the shares of English publishing tycoon Robert Maxwell. For those who don't know who that is, that's Ghislaine Maxwell's dad, a Mossad agent, who was murdered. Ghislaine Maxwell's Mossad agent, billionaire dad, who had a lot of control over the kinds of textbooks American children had access to in public schools, by the way. Well, at least according to this guy, who, I don't know if he's to be trusted. Apparently, he had enough money to buy up all of his shares sometime in the early 90s. I don't know. In Teva Pharmaceuticals. You know, something to think about. He also, according to him, he was involved in lots of tech startups, including, and maybe this is why they allowed him into the country in 1987. You know, it's a little foggy as to why he was allowed, but perhaps it was because he was, according to him, at some point the CEO of Playnet. And if it's the same Playnet I can find information on, it's a company that originated in the 1980s, started by two Jews, that was sort of like the beginnings of an online gaming type of ecosystem. I mean, it's so old. It was the 80s, dial-up modems, Commodore 64s. That's how old we're talking. Here's a, in fact, here's a news report from 1983 talking about Playnet. So again, maybe this is why he came to America in 1987.
WRGB, TV6, Albany, Schenectady, Troy. Live from the Capital District's leading news station, this is News Center 6.
Good evening. I'm Ernie Tatro.
I'm Ed Day.
The firm is called Playnet. You've never heard of it, but it's a name that someday may be a household word all across America.
This man once had a promising career with General Electric. He was the strategic planner at the R&D Center until he quit.
Well, I guess I decided after a while the only job at GE that I was really interested in was chairman of the board, and that one wasn't available. So
Howard Goldberg is a chairman now of an incubator firm called Playnet.
At the heart of Playnet's idea is the home computer, the fact that there are so many in homes across the country now and that so many people have so little to do with their home computer.
What Playnet will give the home computer owner is an opponent in a game, not a computer opponent, but another person, perhaps across the nation, to play chess or Monopoly or Bridge or any number of other games. Playnet will tie home computers together through phone lines and act as referee, programmer, banker, and croupier in various games. Miles Kurland is the graphics programmer, and his graphics are spectacular.
Well, right now I'm just overseeing the graphics. There are a number of students who are working on individual games, and we want to make sure all the graphics on all the games are up to snuff.
In about a year, Playnet will offer its services nationwide after it has raised about $3 million in capital. It is a state-of-the-arts business aimed at the millions of home computer users.
Well, we plan our market launch for September of 84. That's about a year from now, and that'll be our first real revenue. And we expect to reach a positive cash flow in approximately 2.5 years.
Playnet plans to be able to connect almost any type of home computer to the network and to offer other services besides games, perhaps the world's largest football pool, tournaments with prizes, message services, and eventually even perhaps banking, shopping, and perhaps even ticket reserving services.
Whoa, crazy, crazy. All sounds very futuristic. So maybe that's why Mooley, Muli Cohen came to America to work for Playnet because, according to him, he was working there. Lots of Israelis, according to Muli, there's lots of Israeli software in America. I mean, so it's totally normal.
There's a ton of talent out there in Israel, and the intellectual capital is one of the most important things right now. If you look at the software that the talent in Israel produce right now, even for the defense side of the United States, every fighter pilot right now contain the software. Every cockpit of fighter pilot of the Phantom 14, 15, 16, 18, and more contain the software of the Israeli technology that come out of there.
So, nothing to worry about there, I'm sure. He then went on to found, along with a weird collection of people, including the guy who invented Pong, a company called ECAST. You've all heard of ECAST, right? Everyone's heard of ECAST. There's a lot of companies. They got started in the 90s. That started with E. There was E everything. It was basically you wanted to make $1 million. You put an E in front of a word and you would make a ton of money. You could, you know, E phones, E machines, email, E cast, E radio. Unless you were Apple, then you put I in front of everything. But everyone else put E in front of everything. So ECAST, you know, it's one of those household names that everyone knows well, right?
Hello, what? This is Wes Romine from ECAST. The team here at ECAST is proud to announce the launch of our new user interface, software version 4.0, and our best to date. ECAST is making it easier for people to find the music they like. There are four key elements to our upgrade that I'd like to introduce you to. First, music lists and searches are now based on popularity.
Oh,
second,
we fancy. Anyway, so it's like Touch Tunes for Americans. Like, I don't know if that's international. It's a jukebox. It's an internet jukebox in bars that I'd never heard of before. So, but I had heard of Touch Tunes, who apparently sued ECAST for breach of patent. A lot of times. So, anyway. ECAST was one of these .com businesses where a lot of Jews got rich by putting E's in front of other words and then telling you they were going to do whatever, they were going to do something that already existed only with computers or the internet or both. And in this case, it was jukeboxes. So they were going to do jukeboxes only with an E in front of it. There's a, look at that fancy touchscreen back in the 90s. Ooh. Oh yeah, I bet that was a super accurate touchscreen that didn't drive you crazy when you tried to type things in.
We see giving back to the Jewish community something which is very important.
I bet you do. We'll get back to that in a second. So he gets really rich. Muli gets really rich off of this internet computer jukebox because, you know, that's a big demand. A lot of demand for jukeboxes with the internet. You know, it was bigger than the iPad, I'm sure. You know, bigger than... everything, really. I mean, it's ECAST. You know, everyone has like an ECAST phone these days, you know, and drive an ECAST car. Anyway, so he gets super rich. He has this really amazing home. In fact, I looked it up on Zillow. Did I load the pictures of it in Zillow from Zillow? If not, I'll bring it up now. Let me see. This house is crazy big. It's in Belvedere, California, which is basically Well, you'll see the views that he gets. Let me get these up here. Apparently I forgot to load these in. We'll do it this way. All right. I knew I forgot something. I got a lot of stuff tonight. There's a lot of stuff to deal with tonight in terms of Mr. Mule here. What a name, right? It's like your name being like Nigger Kike or something. Mule Cohen. Okay, here we go. There he is. There he is, looking fancy. And there's this fancy gate. Look at that. Where's the Zillow page, though? I got the Zillow. Here we are. Here's the Zillow page. $24 million. $24 million. 433 Golden Gate Avenue, Belvedere, California. You got, that's the Golden Gate Bridge right there. I mean, your backyard basically is the Golden Gate Bridge. Or, you know, between you and the Golden Gate Bridge, all there is water. Huge house. You've got, it was built in 1900, so it's kind of an old mansion, I guess. Do I have the square footage on here? Oh, yeah, there it is, right there. It's almost 8,000 square feet. Six bathrooms, four bedrooms. I would have expected more bedrooms than four, but I guess if you've got close to 8,000 square feet, you're not really, I guess they're, you can make your kids share a room with, or sleep in the living room or something like that. But you got a nice little fancy gate, backyard, you know, nice little, I guess that's the entryway. Nice fancy doors. There's your view when you're looking out on the veranda. See, straight shot to the Golden Gate Bridge. There's San Francisco right across the water. So you can just sit there like you own the world. Bathrooms look a little cheesy. Looks like it hasn't been redone since like the 90s or so. That looks really 90s. That looks like my parents' bathroom in the 90s. I was expecting to be kind of nicer, to be honest. You know, with a price tag of $24 million, this looks kind of like a McMansion in a lot of ways. Like, no, the kitchen looks all right, but again, I'm sure there's those appliances there, that refrigerator and freezer that's built into the cabinets there. I'm sure that's like $100,000 worth of machinery right there. Nice big stove. Yeah, the hood on that thing. Yeah, okay. A little bit of a balcony. Pretty fucking nice. I got the weirdo art there. Weirdo rich people art. Ripping your chest open kind of art. Okay. But yeah, see, it all seems very 90s. All seems very 90s, the decor. I guess that's a little interesting. Got a weird, what is that? Looks like bombs. Got a desk made out of bombs with an iMac on it. I don't know. I'm not that impressed. Anyway, really fancy house, really expensive house. Yeah, kind of a status symbol. You know, even for someone who had who was the head of a company, one of the founders of a company like Ecast, which we all know and love, it seems a little pricey. Little pricey. Oh, this is kind of nice. Now, lots of wood. Lots of wood. There we go. Nice little view there. But yeah, $25 million house, almost 8,000 square feet. Yeah, kind of nice. Kind of nice. Inside the house, he had lots of original art. Of course, it was all modern art. But really expensive, high dollar, like original Picassos, that kind of a thing. Very impressive. He was a man of culture, Mule. He had a full-time staff. When people would come to his house, they were very impressed not only by the the art, and he's let people know, you know, this isn't even all my art. I know it looks like my house is just chock full of modern art, but I actually I loan out a lot of my art to national museums. You've probably seen some of, if you've gone to an art museum, you've probably seen some of my art because I'm this super Jew billionaire with this fancy house full of art.
I thought he was brilliant. This company had an entire floor in the financial district completely remodeled on New Montgomery Street. They had teams of Ivy League people that had great success before, and they had a product that was truly amazing.
It plays tunes.
Oh, it's amazing. It plays tunes. It was so easy to get rich in the 90s. We were born just too late to take advantage of that, huh? Every nerd like my age and younger were just like, God, you motherfuckers. All you had to do was just put E in front of a word and you got millions of dollars. You sons of bitches. Anyway. It plays tunes. So Michael Farrell was one of the many investors in, because Mooley Cohen was such a genius, the way he had set up his company, Ecast, was, you know, as one of the founders, when they went public, he was given hundreds of thousands of shares. Hundreds of thousands of shares. Now, maybe they weren't worth a lot yet, but, like I said, this is the dot-com bubble. It hadn't burst yet. And Microsoft, everyone's heard of Microsoft, right? Microsoft was poised to purchase Ecast. They were itching to buy Ecast. Who wouldn't want, it plays tunes. Who wouldn't want to buy Ecast? And out of the kindness of his heart, Mooley approached his friend Michael Farrell and said, you know, I'll let you buy some of my founder's stock at the price, the going rate right now. And then when Microsoft buys the company and the stock goes through the roof, and you've seen it all over the news, right? You see all these companies where the stock is worth a dollar one week and $100 the next week. Like every bubble, right? The bubble hadn't popped yet, so it's like in the housing crisis. You could buy a house for $30,000 and then sell it for $130,000, maybe like a couple months later. And so his friend Michael Farrell was like, oh, I don't know, this sounds pretty crazy. That sounds like a good deal. You sound like a really good friend. And I believe you because you have that fancy house and you have all this art. You have your own private jet. I mean, you know, who has their own private jet?
The records show that Mooley had to have his own china on the jet. He had to have a sticker with his insignia on the jet so everyone would think that he owned it.
Oh, that doesn't sound good. So they would think he, but I thought he owned it. He owned it, right?
One day he said, you know, I'd really like to do something for you. I can give you a little rocket ship. You know, there's a transaction coming, and you'll make a nice little nest egg for your family. I felt very grateful that he was doing this for me.
On his jet, right? Because the jet has his logo on it. It has his china.
You're not talking about it, in some bar in San Francisco. You're at 32,000 feet doing 0.79 Mach in a Gulfstream jet with a stewardess feeding you caviar. I mean, it's very believable. And it's not one jet ride. It's jet ride after jet ride after jet ride.
Oh, okay. So, obviously, the guy's not asking for much either. If he can afford this, if he's like flying this jet all over the fucking place, he's got that $25 million house that's full of Picassos, and all he's asking is for a few hundred thousand dollars, a million max. And then that's going to turn into millions and millions and millions of dollars. I mean, why would I not trust this guy? He served in the Israeli army.
He went as far as to take me to Wells Fargo, one of the top wealth management firms in San Francisco, to set up my account for this large amount of money that I'm going to get. Who goes to that length?
Well, Mooley does. Good old Mooley. He wants to make sure your money is invested correctly. He knows you're just some poor schlub. You don't know what to do with millions of dollars. But you can trust old Uncle Mooley. Right? So Mooley goes and helps you set up that account.
He spent exorbitant amounts of money, far more money than I ever put into shares. So there was never a thought in my mind that he needed my money.
Right. I mean, the guy spent, I mean, again, he's just asking for a few hundred thousand dollars. The guy's travel budget is like a few hundred thousand dollars, if not more.
Simple math. If 100,000 will become a million, then why not get $1 million worth and make 10 million?
Why not? Why not? You know, you can totally trust this guy.
He would have his personal doctor call the house to make sure you were okay if he thought you had a cold. I mean, he went to great lengths to convince you that he was a good friend. As long as you were giving him money.
I can't imagine that having friends like that. I mean, especially the man's from Israel. I can't imagine people from Israel treating Americans like that, right? That they're only friends as long as you keep giving them money. Right? That sounds crazy. Sounds crazy that people in Israel with access to lots and lots of money would only act concerned about your well-being and say what great friends you are as long as you kept giving them money. That they would hold that over your head. That somehow that would cloud the friendship. That you would feel as if the money ever stopped coming, they would stop being your friend like that. Like, that's insane. So, of course, obviously, it's a good thing that he kept, you know, trusting Mooley.
As soon as we quit putting money in, all the phone calls stopped, all the jet rides stopped, and Mooley was on to his next program, whoever that was or however that unfolded. But, overnight, he went from, you know, my best friend, 10 calls a day, to complete radio silent.
Huh. Well, that's weird, because I thought he learned a thing or two about honor. You know, having served in the Israeli military, right? I'm sure he learned all about honor and trust and perseverance and... Anyway. So the next project, in terms of, I'm sorry, not project, he's looking for investors. He's looking for investors because out of the kindness of his heart, I mean, he knows how lucky he's been. He knows that not everyone was born at the exact right moment to where they could just put an E in front of a thing and get millions of dollars just thrown at them from Microsoft and everybody else. And so, like many Jews who get lucky in this way, he decided he wants to give away as much of his money as he can. You know, like you guys might remember another very lucky, wealthy billionaire Jew who also had the first name of Sam, who said exactly that, right? That he wanted to get rid of all of his wealth before he died. And that worked out great for everybody, didn't it? So he decided, you know who's got lots of money that I want to give more money to because they're very responsible with their money? It's stupid black Hollywood communists. Stupid black Hollywood communists. They just can't catch a break. You know, they're trying so hard to make the world a better place, and they just can't get anywhere, right? Stupid black communist Hollywood faggots. They need, they, you know, especially people like Danny Glover, right? Everyone's favorite stupid black Hollywood communist, Danny Glover.
This is supposed to be his coming out party, his debutante ball for being a philanthropist. And he tells people he's got $60 million and he wants to give it away.
$60 million! $60 million he's got to give away to stupid fucking communist Hollywood niggers. Right? $60 million fucking bucks. And look, and he really gives a shit about philanthropy. He's just trying to help people out.
For me, philanthropy came in a little bit later stage in my life. It came when I was feeling I'm successful. I know right now that this is a must that anybody should have from a very young age. My goal is to give my fortune back to society before I'm gone from this world. I would like to make sure it goes to the right places that I'm comfortable with. And I think that anybody that can put a goal like that in front of them would feel very comfortable with himself, I think in this world and in the next world. I'm a big believer on scale and efficiency. If you follow what Warren Buffett did by giving all his fortune to the Bill and Melinda Gates, he didn't want to reinvent his wheel. He went right in to a place where he believed in, that have a lot of leverage, that know what they're doing, and I pretty much follow that discipline. Camp Okaizu is the largest camp treating children in Northern California. It's a fantastic place. We have over 1,000 kids out there every summer. We have a hospital on premise. Every child that have any immunology disease pretty much that go and get treatment in the 35 hospitals in Northern California register automatically to our camp. You just see these kids out there having the best time of their lives, and you see the joy and the happiness, the freedom. It's fulfilling you. I mean, it's very easy to be engaged. I create the Child Vision Campaign worldwide. We are curing over 100,000 blind people worldwide from India and Nepal. It's a mission that I put in front of myself because I think the achievement to cure childhood blindness right now in the next 5 to 7 years is very doable.
Totally doable. And we know this because he said this about 20 years ago. And so clearly blindness is gone, right? Thanks to the electronic jukebox, the internet jukebox, and Danny Glover. Blindness has been the scourge of the world, and now it's gone. We have cured blindness in children. I wonder what an Israeli Jew would want access to blind kids for. That's something. Probably nothing. Probably nothing at all. So he cured. So he goes to Danny Glover, and he's like, Danny Glover, I like the cut of your jib. You know what, Danny Glover? You seem really fucking smart. You seem really smart, and I say this not to just butter you up, but because I have seen you in interviews. For example, you were in an interview recently, Danny Glover, talking about why Detroit had fallen apart. That you had figured it out, right? You knew that Henry Ford had built a America's Paris, people said. It was this wonderfully developed city in Michigan. He was building Fords. He was paying people a livable wage. All the other car companies started to move to Detroit. It was a manufacturing center of the world. And And then the Great Negro Migration happened. And the white people failed the blacks. They couldn't handle the greatness. You know, I'm doing a bad job of articulating this, Danny Glover. I saw you in this interview, and this is when I knew. This is when I knew, Danny Glover, you would be the perfect person to invest in my very legitimate business proposition, Danny Glover.
This library right now, so I think it's the McGregor Library. It used to be the state of art library in the country. It was built by Ford as he began to shape this idea of a model community. Highland Park is a part of Ford's vision of a model community. You know, workers living here, obviously middle class. It's not the same neighborhood it was at the time of this envisioning of it, but certainly, and the demographics has changed dramatically since then. The racial demographics have changed since then, but it's very much connected to. This library is an edifice of the dysfunctionalism or the collapse, or as we say, collapse of an idea, the collapse of a way of life. 40% unemployment in Detroit. So there's a different connection between 40% unemployment, the abandonment of this right here, this library, which should be a very functional library. And think of the idea of a library and what significance a library means in people's lives, a community's life, you know. This library was a very functional library. It has served this community well. And now it doesn't serve as well. So it's a collapse of so many things. The social form is to say, its connection to this is that with this collapse, you know, which is an obvious collapse of a paradigm, you know, the failure of a paradigm, what happens now? What do we do now? How do we begin to reconstruct and reimagine our world?
It's amazing how eloquent you were in that library. The library that you know, was very important to the people. And the library. With the library. So Danny Glover was very impressed by Mooley's fancy house. Mooley's fancy paintings. And Mooley's interesting proposition, the same proposition that he had offered to his friend Michael Farrell, a friend until he stopped paying him hundreds of thousands of dollars. He said, I've got this founder's stock in these jukeboxes that Microsoft just can't live without. They must have the jukeboxes. And you can get this founder stock that I have that I just want to give away to random people for no reason. And so I want to give it away so hard and so badly. I'm throwing parties and inviting rich people that I can give free money to my house. So they can buy my stock that's going to, you know, go 100x. It's going to go 100x. And I know that you are a communist that supports Vanguard Public Foundation here locally in the San Francisco area. And you care about redistributing wealth. And so if I give you this opportunity where you give me a few million bucks, it turns into like several million bucks, you'll make sure it gets into the hands of all the right people. Because you work for you support Vanguard.
They were united by a belief that basically wealth and power in society should be redistributed. And they wanted to do their part to contribute to social change activism at the very grassroots level.
Sounds good to me. So you can give me this money that you have access to through your donors. And connect me to the other rich people who are communists that want to spread the love around. And you know, so you guys get it. You guys, that's what I want to do. And so Danny Glover was like, that sounds awesome. Here's my buddy, Harry Dillon. Harry Dillon. This is starting to sound like a bad joke. A Jew, a Pajit, and a black man walk into a bar. So Harry Dillon, Pajit extraordinaire, had been running this Vanguard foundation, taken over since the Civil Rights Movement, did all the events and the fundraising. So he not only knew Danny Glover, he knew a lot of these other donors that would give big money to a random Israeli Jew who was just giving away free money. There he is there. There's Harry. And so Harry arranged for him to meet with lots of different donors where they could purchase hundreds of thousands of his founder stock, including this man here. This is Sam Mills, who was a rich guy who inherited a lot of his money. He was a son of one of the guys who started 3M. So, you know, he was a fairly wealthy guy that lived in the Napa Valley area. And he was like, well, hold on there, Danny Glover. I mean, I know he said he talked a big game. He told you how smart he thought you were, but I come from the world of rich people. And I don't, you can't just trust anyone that says they're going to give away free money. I know he's Jewish, and that's usually a good sign. But I come from real money. I want to meet this guy, make sure that he's legit. So he went down to the guy's house, and he was like, holy shit. This guy's got like millions and millions and millions of dollars worth of art. You know, original Picassos and shit just hanging on the wall. This is insane. Like, who has all this kind of money? This is fucking insane. And he seems to like really get it. He seems to, his house, this is like a $25 million house. I mean, that's not nothing.
I think business is a very simple thing to do, okay? I mean, people make it too complex. I really believe it's a very straightforward thing. I think art is very complex to do. My favorite period is the 20th century. I'm very much like this period. Those iconic names at the time. They've been very talented, very competitive. They look at each other pieces, and sometimes you see similarities, and sometimes you see a great innovation from each one of them capitalize on each other ideas. A very entrepreneurial way. I'm picking my art because I like it, okay? I'm only buying what I like. I'm not emotional so much about it, but if you look at the 99 percentile in the most iconic pieces, they, for the last 30 years, bet the S&P by at least 5%, which is pretty good track record. So, you know, it worked great. I mean, for me personally, it worked very well because, first of all, I enjoy it, and secondly, it's kept its value fantastically.
Wow. So Sam Mills is like, this guy gets it. He's one of us. I should never have doubted an Israeli Jew. What was I thinking? So he wrote a check right there on the spot for $800,000. He said, this sounds legit. I'll write you a check for $800,000, and in return, you'll just give me millions of dollars. That sounds like a good business decision. You're just so rich, you just don't even care.
The truth behind at least much of the artwork was that Mr. Cohen had instructed an artist to reproduce originals and to reproduce what appeared to be an original gallery label on, for example, the Jasper Johns piece.
He wanted them done in a way that they looked authentic, so they had to be weathered. So if a piece was painted in the 1920s, it had to look like it was painted in the 1920s and not somebody recreating a 1920s piece today. The little backstory about each piece that would accompany the artwork so that visitors would come to his house like a museum and see what the piece what it was about. And everyone felt that these pieces were authentic. There were no indications that they were reproductions or that they weren't the real thing. So when you came in, you would see art supposedly by Matisse, by Picasso, by Renoir, and people who were knowledgeable, who had backgrounds in art history in college, were impressed. He would tell people that his artwork is on loan to some museums, and this is what he does, this is his passion, and so he only has some of it here. Everything else is in the Metropolitan Museum of Art or other museums around the world, and he would lend them out and as a way to show the world the benefit of art.
Well, hold on. there must be some mistake. That's impossible. There must be some mistake. Clearly, that doesn't make as much sense as he's just this Israeli Jew, this super rich Israeli Jew that makes jukeboxes, and Microsoft is going to give him millions of dollars that he in turn wants to give to black Hollywood communists. Right? And anyone else that wants to give him some money. The more the merrier. Like this check here for $580,000. Right, Danny Glover? So Danny Glover, he's like, yeah, I'm glad Sam Mills checked it all out. And, because I was a little worried. This was starting. I was feeling a little over my head. Like, I might be a rich little Negro, but like, what have I really made? Right? I've made like the Lethal Weapon movie. I mean, how much? I mean, those are big movies, but how much really can I have? I've been to Hollywood parties. I've probably seen some really fucked up shit, but this is like turbo Jew stuff. Like, there's like Jews, and then there's like fucking Jews. You know what I mean? But luckily, Sam Mills said it was all good. I'm going to tell my other black communist friends, like Harry Belafonte. Harry Belafonte, who definitely doesn't have a chip on his shoulder about white people, definitely isn't a communist.
About the fact that great men have been disenfranchised for a long time and have not been able to sit in high places politically or on other levels because of color. But this has had great psychological ramifications, not only for the Negro community, who has had many reversals over the last couple of years, because the racism which permeates American life from top to bottom in very subtle ways and in very aggressive, obvious ways, the Negro has paid a terrible price for this. But somehow you'll find that racism, in its subtlest and its most evil sense, has worked its way deep into the fiber of the hearts and minds of many men and women. And with this going on, it has had its incredible influence on my own life. I was born in the ghetto. My mother was a domestic worker. My father was a seaman. I grew up in Harlem. I grew up not only with racism and segregation in America, but I grew up in the West Indies under colonialism. And my aunts and uncles and my grandparents were agriculturalists. They were farmers. And I saw what they did from morning until night and what their rewards were under the might of British exploitation.
Definitely doesn't have a chip on his shoulder. Definitely doesn't hate Whitey. Just like Danny Glover's other black communist friend, Delroy Lindo. Delroy Lindo, another Hollywood black communist who certainly doesn't have like a burning rage, burning hatred of white people.
Yep, don't get up. Adrian, how are you?
Good.
Great. Listen, everyone at the network loves you. You're smart, you're articulate. The thing is we like it when you bring a little more heat to the panel.
Oh, be the angry black man.
God, no. That's an ugly stereotype. Just go with your impulses. People are riled up these days. They want to hear someone saying what they're thinking. That's all. We're all looking for those viral moments. I'll see you out there. It's a great vest.
Why does racism only go one way? That's what I want to know. I see racism against whites every day, every single day, yet I'm a racist for pointing that out?
Adrian, what's your take?
Take on what?
What Chuck just said. Is racism just a one-way street?
I think that's his opinion.
Look at your firm, Adrian. You get the benefit of no-bid contracts because you're an African-American firm. Now, as a white lawyer, what am I supposed to think of that?
I don't know.
I think Chuck is pointing out a double standard here, Adrian. I mean, take hip-hop. We've talked about this on the show before. You have African-American rappers saying N-word this and N-word that, but a Caucasian can't.
So say it.
Say what?
Say the word you want to say.
I'm not saying that I want to say it. I'm just saying that I can't.
Sure you can. Say it. Say it right now. I will say it with you.
Okay. This is hypocritical. You know we can't.
Sure you can. This is America. Both of you. Say it.
All right. I think we can move on.
Why? Why move on when you want to say it? Both of you want to say it. Huh? All together. Everybody.
Oh, yeah, those silly white people and their desire to say nigger. Delroy Lindo, he was also like, this sounds like a good plan. I will also give money to this totally trustworthy billionaire Israeli Jew who makes jukeboxes that Bill Gates must have. So they give him some money. Lots of money. In fact, after I think the first meeting, he got something around $6.2
million.
$6.2 million for what he said was 2.3 million shares. So it's a bargain. It's a bargain because those shares are sure to skyrocket to $100. You know, one thing that this sheds lights on, sheds a light on, and look, you know, we can make fun of the people who are involved here, and we should, but this is probably not that unusual among the rich. Insider trading is absolutely a normal thing among the rich. You can say, oh, they were stupid to trust this Israeli Jew. How do you think so many of these NGOs, so many of these community organizers get their money? Now, just a couple years after this was going on, money was getting pumped into these NGOs and these nonprofits directly through the Justice Department. The Justice Department, you know, under Obama, was they would find a company like HSBC and, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars, and they would just grant that money. They would give government grants, money you don't have to pay back. They would just give them, you know, millions of dollars to whatever black communist group they wanted to give money to. And there's lots of money laundering like that that happens, which is exactly what it is. You want to know why our opponents have so much money? This probably really is not that unusual. To have an Israeli Jew show up to some communist financiers and say, invest in this thing. It's going to quadruple in price in a couple of weeks. And if you want evidence of that, just look at Nancy Pelosi's super lucky stock trades. Because that's another thing that's, by the way, inside, just in terms of legality, insider trading laws don't even apply to members of Congress. If you're a member of Congress and you know for a fact because you're either your committee or a committee that you have insider information on because you're a member of Congress, you know you're about to regulate a entire industry out of business, which happens, or you have access to internal documents of a company, tax information, earnings. It's actually not illegal for members of Congress to trade stocks with that information, and they do. And you'd be crazy if you thought that information didn't then get passed on to donors who finance the campaigns of these people, who then use those profits that they make to donate back to the politicians that gave them the inside information. So we can make fun of these fucking knuckleheads for getting obviously tricked because it sounds stupid to us. But you have to realize this is the sort of thing that just goes on. It just happened to not really be going on this time, as I'm sure everyone's figured out by now, but like, as it'll become more clear. Okay? So he's telling people like that Pajit Harry Dillon that he's going out to dinner with Bill Gates and Stephen Ballmer, you know, the CEO of Microsoft. Here's a funny email where Harry Dillon, you know, total, you know, this volunteer, this guy who's made his entire career serving the people and volunteering, and he gets jury duty and he's trying to get out of it. And he's all, "Mooley, I know you're in the middle of dinner with Gates and Ballmer right now." Yeah, that didn't happen. "Sure it's going well." "Well, you know, I was looking forward to hearing about it tomorrow morning, because here's the thing. They invested all this money, millions and millions of dollars, and they're watching the news. They're watching, you know, Fox News Business and CNBC and all this other. They're waiting to hear that story about Microsoft acquiring Ecast. And it's not happening. So there you go. People are starting to get a little bit nervous. They're a little bit nervous, but Mooley has assured them, "Oh, no, I'm having dinner with Bill Gates and Stephen Ballmer." So Harry Dillon was very upset, was like, "Okay, well, I got jury duty. I'm right when you're having dinner with Bill Gates and Stephen Ballmer. I was looking forward to hearing about it tomorrow morning, but I wanted to let you know that the cattle call for jury duty has switched this afternoon to tomorrow morning, and I have to go and be there through the first stage of the process in order to get released from having to serve on jury duty. My guess is I could be there until 4 in the afternoon, but it could go as late as 5:30, and they don't allow you to have a cell phone on the courtroom. It's ironic and frustrating that this is the one day I have to go to do jury duty. Blah, 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 blah." But then he tells them, "You know, sorry guys, there's a little delay. There's a little delay. And if you've been looking, if you guys have been trying to pay attention to what's going on with Microsoft these days, this is right in the time when the EU was fining Microsoft on, you know, for antitrust left, right, and sideways. These hearings went on for, well, several years. And it was in the news all the time that Microsoft was facing all these antitrust issues with the EU, a lot of their products, but you know, everything from Internet Explorer, you know, their browser back then, and to you know, some of their other products that, according to the EU, it was a monopoly, right? And so all Mooley had to do is say, "Well, just take a look at the news. There's a problem." In fact, he didn't just say that this was a problem, that's why it's delayed. He said, "Actually, I need even more money. Because now with the EU getting involved, the EU is going to get very upset if they're trying to stop Microsoft from having a monopoly, and then Microsoft starts going around acquiring more things that are going to make them more of a monopoly. I mean, imagine what the EU would think if Microsoft cornered the market on electronic jukeboxes. Don't you know there's like 50 European companies right now trying to break into the electronic jukebox game? And it's just going to be chaos if they find out that Microsoft's going to get eCast. So you need to give us more money, because the way that this is all shaking out, you're going to actually be stripped of your shares. The shares that you already put money into, you already own. Look, it's not mine. It's nothing I'm doing. I wish I could do something about it. But we have to grease the palms of the European regulators. We have to give more money, millions of dollars more, to these European regulators, buy these bonds and scratch the backs of these guys and invest in this thing in order for them to just let it go, let it slide, let it all work out. And, smart guy Sam Mills with the 3M money was like, what? That checks out. That checks out. I was a little bit worried. A little bit worried that that this wasn't going to work out. But it sounds like you're on top of it there, Mooley. And Mooley's like, yes. Yes, I am.
But Mooley Cohen is working on it.
So Mooley Cohen's working on it. He's going to get it all straightened out. So obviously, smart guy Steve Mills writes another check for $805,000. And the real funny part about all this is, by this time in the obvious scam, he didn't even work for eCast anymore. At this point, he was forced out of eCast, the only company that authorities would later legitimately be able to tie him to. He had been forced out. He didn't have any founder stock. That was all just made up, obviously. And he was making so much money off of just, you know, random retards giving him millions of dollars, that he just kept playing acting like he was there. And look, in a way you could say, I mean, this is the kind of thing that would be really easy to figure out. Not like these days, right? Like if this kind of thing was going on, you could find out, like, someone on Twitter would be tweeting about it, or, you know, there was a lot more electronic news about whatever specific thing you wanted news on. But if you just back then looked up Mooley Cohen, you would just see those fucking videos that he made himself talking about philanthropy and all this other bullshit. And some and MooleyCohen.com, which just had like all this fake bullshit and talking about how he was a bajillionaire. And so there really wasn't a lot of, I mean, I guess if you really cared, I mean, you could do some due diligence. You could probably hire a firm that specializes in this kind of a thing and find out who this guy really is. But if, you know, he's showing you Picassos and flying you around in his private jet, yeah, maybe you believe it. Maybe you believe it. Even though at this point he doesn't even work at eCast anymore. He's just some guy. He's just living off the scam at this point. But he wants even more money. So he starts to tell the people at Vanguard, the foundation that Danny Glover was giving money to, that was run by that Pajit guy. He starts telling just even like the regular staff, hey, you know, usually I'm asking for millions of dollars, but this deal is going to happen pretty soon now. And, you know, you guys have been so patient and waited so long. Any amount of money you can scrap together, you know, we'll pool it all together and we'll let you in on this deal. And you're going to 10X. So if you can come up with $3,000, that's going to be $30,000. And if you can come up with $30,000, that's going to be $300,000. I mean, really think about this. You don't want to miss it. So the more you put in, the more it's a guaranteed thing.
The only details I had gotten is that Dylan was going to invest in this company that was being bought out by Microsoft. And I heard the words Microsoft, and I thought, well, that's a safe bet. Of course it'll be safe. My money will be safe there. And so I wrote them a check for $300,000.
Yeah, so, you know, old ladies writing checks for $300,000, trying to get in on this. Where was all this money going? I mean, at this point, we're talking tens of millions of dollars. And turns out he actually didn't even own that mansion. He was renting it. And we know the art's not real. And we know that he doesn't own the jet. He's renting that. He makes him put a sticker on it that says it's his when he flies in it. And change the dishes out, like, to some, I guess, dishes he had custom made to have his logo on it or something. But, yeah, so where's all this money going? Seems a little bit crazy, because this is tens of millions of dollars. It's expensive to, in fact, what the rent was to live in that mansion. And this adds up, obviously. It was $15,000 a month. Well, it's not cheap. $15,000, and it's not $25 million. You know, and I don't know what a mortgage on a $25 million house would be, but that's probably about $15,000 or something. I don't know. And then to rent the private jet, you know, it's not his, but it's probably a lot of money. But still, like, I feel like there's still tens of millions of dollars missing here.
I documented that Mooley Cohen spent approximately $2.1 million just in jewelry from 2002 to 2009.
Okay, well, for the fellas out there, bitches be spending our money. Now, the name of this stream was Kosher Billionaire Edition, and we started out the stream talking about Stacy. Literally, her name is Stacy. Stacy Cohen. Stacy Cohen was, she was spending that money. In fact, one ring, this ring right here, this diamond ring, that's a big fucking diamond. That ring was $1.4 million. That ring. So he bought her a ring for $1.4 million. He bought a Rolls Royce for about $400,000. An Aston Martin for about $200,000. A Fedwire, I don't know what that is, $52,000. A Jaguar for $30,000. A Mercedes for $14,000. So about $1 million just in cars. I think it was like a 10-car garage or something crazy like that. So, yeah, I spent a lot of money there. A lot of personal, you know, just the cost of his staff. The rent, we were talking about that, added up to about $1.4 million the time that he was there. Then there's not all these expenses are labeled. Then he had some other expense that's $500,000. A chef. What kind of chef is $350,000? What chef is making $350,000? Hopefully that's not a year. That's a lot of money. If your chef is, that must be the best fucking chef in the world. Security is close to $200,000. A driver, $150,000. Again, there's some more expenses not labeled. Got $100,000 here, $50,000 there. You know, it's a lot of money. It's starting to add up. But don't worry, grandma's got it covered.
I kept getting these emails about how the European Union is holding up the deal with Microsoft, and I thought, oh, well, that's typical.
But Mooley Cohen is working on it.
Cohen is working on it.
Oh yeah, he's working on it. He's got it. He's got it all figured out. So people start to get a little nervous, even though, like I said, you turn on the news back then, and you see a lot of this stuff kind of going on. So at least it's matching up with his story.
The future of software giant Microsoft is at stake in Europe's top court on Monday, when the court of first instance, the second highest court in the European Union, will announce its long-awaited decision in the fight between Microsoft and the European competition authorities. Microsoft 3 years ago appealed against the European Commission's decision to fine it nearly 500 million euro for abusing its dominant market position. It was the highest competition fine in European history. The Seattle-based company at the time had a market share of some 95% in the market for PC operating systems. According to Brussels, that is super dominant. Brussels ordered Microsoft to unbundle, for instance, its Windows Media Player from the Windows operating system software, so that competitors like Real and QuickTime could also offer their own players. The company also was forced to share information on the architecture of its software for server systems, that to make it easier for competing developers to make new programs. But the company failed to abide by both these orders, which led to additional fines in the last 2 years.
Microsoft has failed to comply with certain of its obligations under the March 2004 Commission antitrust decision.
Monday's decision is seen as highly significant. If Microsoft loses, it may also be forced to make major adjustments to its Vista operating system. The European Commission in the meantime...
I almost forgot about Windows Vista. I'm going to have nightmares of tonight now. Just anyway, so people, you know, they watch the news, they see this going on. I think in this case, it was just Mooley got lucky. Mooley got lucky, and it helped him push it along, you know, a little bit. Oh, don't worry, guys, I got it all figured out. You know, like here's him saying, the entire team, you know, all of our people, our attorneys, technical people, were flying to Europe for an in-person meeting with the EU commissioners. You know, we're working on it.
But Mooley Cohen is working on it.
Ah, yes.
Mooney Cohen is working on it.
He's working on it. So if by working on it you mean he went to Las Vegas... He went to Las Vegas with his Stacy, and they spent something, you know, tens of thousands of dollars in Las Vegas. Speaking of Stacy, spending all the money. Stacy, she obviously, I mean, look, the only reason why Stacy, literally Stacy, would be with a guy like this. Was because of the image. The whole image. And especially the only way a Stacy would convert to Judaism for a guy like this is for the image. Just ask Trump's daughter. So part of that image was, like all girls that think they're unique and special, instead of Instagram, because they didn't exist, she still had that desire. She had that desire to have photos taken of how rich she was and shown to the world, so that all the whole world could be jealous of the lifestyle that she had. And so she made a book called The Kosher Billionaire's Secret Recipe. And it's a recipe book, but really it's just pictures of her being super rich. In fact, it's still on Amazon. You can look at the reviews. And they say, well, it's like 80% pictures of Stacy and 20% recipes of garbage. But, you know... Mooley had to make sure he could provide. And so he spent $1 million. $1 million. On making a coffee table book of her in these extremely lavish environments, wearing extremely lavish clothing, so he could so that she could write this book and have pictures and be featured in, you know, for example, I think this is the San Francisco Examiner. Lives of Style, Stacy Cohen. Now, you gotta love how this is worded. Stacy Cohen is a mensch. She always seemed to know what she wants and where she's going. Oh, let's take a look at this. I'm gonna read some of this annoying article talking about how interesting she is. Her feet are firmly planted on the ground, and she's really nice. Originally from Texas, she earned a bachelor's degree in public relations from Southern Methodist University. She moved to Southern California to become an actress. She appeared in Lethal Weapon 4, probably because of, Mooley got her in with the connection with what's his nuts. And Baywatch. Now, I looked into this. I was like, was she a chick on Baywatch? I looked with her last name. Her last name before was Cohen. She was probably a girl in a bikini walking in the background on Baywatch, because she wasn't like one of the Baywatch girls. And I don't even know if she was credited, because I couldn't. Maybe she, like I said, she's probably like an extra in Baywatch. The Tonight Show in a skit with Jay Leno. So again, because billionaire Jew guy got her on a skit with Jay Leno. That's when fate stepped in and changed her life. We had a love at first sight story. She says about meeting her husband, Mooley, a high-tech entrepreneur. He came to a party in LA with mutual friends, and I went with my friends, and he saw me and walked up to me, and we just started talking. Yeah, I'm sure it didn't hurt that he was a billionaire. Everyone in the room left. We just kept talking, and we didn't know they were gone. We just danced the whole evening. The two started dating, she says. We both had a very unusual experience. After I met him, I remember thinking, I know him. I know everything about him. Well, you don't know everything. After recurring trips between San Francisco and Santa Monica, well, probably on the private jet, right? Stacy moved to the city. She decided to quit her Methodist faith and become Jewish, just like Mooley. The two were engaged for a year. Mooley proposed on Valentine's Day, and with the $1.4 million ring, I wonder. Living a kosher life, which she calls a healthy way to live, Stacy was inspired to write her gourmet cuisine, a book called The Kosher Billionaire's Secret Recipe. But the book isn't just about eating kosher, she says. It's living a kosher lifestyle, being kind to people, giving back to people. Yeah, giving back to people. How about you giving back their fucking money? It's living the good life. I mean, it's just like, for fuck's sake. And then they talk about how Mooley is like this big philanthropist, which he's not. To the extent that he ever gave money to anyone, I think out of all that money, $2 million of other people's money actually went to any kind of charity. And a lot of the charities that he claimed to be involved with, he wasn't involved with that at all. Like, he just made it all up. So she gets her little I'm a Billionaire Chick book and gets to go and tour around and try to promote it and feel famous again before there were electronic means of fulfilling this need that she had. I found the book. I just didn't order it in time, obviously. I can't get it overnighted or whatever. But there's the few pages that you can see. Like, here's a couple of the actual recipes. But most of it's this. Most of it's like, look at me. That's her on the balcony of that $25 million house that they were renting. I believe that's also in that house. Oh, look at me. I'm holding grapes. So it's like Instagram before Instagram. She's just like, oh, look, me. Oh, look at this. I'm holding champagne and I'm in Paris. Oh, look at that. I'm in front of some fireplace and there's a whole page about how cute I am or something. But yeah. Anyway, the money, you would think, see, here's the fucked up thing, right? She said, well, I knew everything about him, right? And you start to think that maybe she did know about where the money was coming from. Because the money that paid for this book, it cost a million. There's no way this fucking book made $1 million. It cost $1 million to produce this book. It was $1 million in like travel and in, like just the photographer and everything else. But I mean, that's a lot of fucking money for a coffee table book. Some of that, or you could maybe even say all of that, came from this guy, her dad, who they also involved in the scam.
Mooley knew that he had some money from his investment accounts and from his retirement accounts and convinced his father-in-law to invest in ECAST, again, with the same story. ECAST was going to be taken over by Microsoft and you're going to make a lot of money.
So they scammed her dad. They scammed her dad, who was a pediatrician living in Texas. And he had a little bit of money. You know, he's a doctor. So he had a little bit of money. But because they sold the idea to him like the same way they sold it to everyone else, they're like, look, the more you can get together, the more you're going to be fucking rolling the dough because it's going to 10X. So I know you don't, you know, you're not like a bajillionaire, but you're a doctor. You've got a nice house. You've got savings. You're old. You know, you got your retirement. He was able to come up with something like $3.2 million. He got a second mortgage on his house. He liquidated his IRA and sold any other property that he had. Oh, no, it was $3.4 million. So He gave them every dime. He emptied every account that he had because they told him, like, oh, it's any day now. Microsoft's gonna make the purchase, and then you're gonna be rolling the dough. There's a letter from him he sent on Christmas, saying, all I want for Christmas is for Mooley to give me my IRA back. We're doing good here, except for the fact that we're poor now. In fact, they had so little money because, you know, second mortgage, you have to start paying that eventually, right? He got a hole in the roof that he couldn't fix. His stove broke. It was just like everything was falling apart over there. And this was her dad. This was her fucking dad they scammed. But don't worry. Not all of that money went to... the diamonds, $1.4 million diamond rings or $1 million coffee table books or, $500,000 in cars and renting a mansion. Some of it went to good cause and not even just that $3 million I was talking about.
We see giving back to the Jewish community something which is very important for me and my wife. There's... a lot of effort that need to go into education. And we are very small numbered of Jewish left in this world. And we believe we need to maintain a very high integrity and support for the one in need. And I can see that as something which is in front of my everyday thoughts. I'm putting a lot of effort into it. We have orphanage homes in Russia that support a lot of kids. We pretty much focus in areas like Russia, the CIS market, and Israel.
Uh-oh. What a Devin find. What a Devin find that was left out of all the reporting and scrubbed mostly from the internet. Oh, is there a little Chavad Lubavitch connection here? Really? What's this that I found? What's this article I found that, you know, that was not really mentioned anywhere in any of the reporting that was whoopsie left on a obscure website? Donor upgrades Rebbe's tomb. And this is in 2009. This is when the House of Cards was already crumbling. This is July 16th, 2009. From Kol Live, it's some Israeli news website. San Francisco entrepreneur, in fact, it's so Israeli, they won't put San Francisco. This is how Jewish it is. They put S. Francisco because Jews can't put San because that means saint, right? So they won't do it. It's like if you're ever watching like a cartoon from like the 80s or something, and you see Xmas, and you're like, as a kid, I always wondered like, why don't they just write Christmas? Like, are you really saving that much room by putting a big X? And it's like, no, it's because Jews don't want to write the word Christ, and so they put Xmas. Oh, I didn't know. Okay. S. Francisco. San Francisco entrepreneur Muli Cohen notified in a press release of a donation to upgrade the Jewish cemetery in Nizhny, Ukraine, where the Lubavitcher Mittler Rebbe is buried. Mendel Weiss is quoted as praising him. Philanthropist Muli Cohen and his wife Stacy Cohen have provided funding for the Jewish cemetery in Nizhny. The city of Nizhny is located in northern Ukraine and was once a major center of Hasidic Judaism. Today, Jews who visit the Ukraine come to Nizhny on a regular basis to see the local Jewish cemetery and to pray at the site of the tomb of the Hasidic master, the second Lubavitcher, Rabbi Dovber Schneuri, who cares, who was buried in Nizhny in 1827. With Cohen's assistance, the facilities and services received an extensive upgrade, allowing the Jewish cemetery of Nizhny to have guest services for the first time. Until recently, the conditions were very poor and made it extremely difficult for guests and travelers to visit this sacred location. Electricity was not previously available at the site, and the access was extremely limited, especially during the winter months. The work done to renovate the site was significant, and the site has been improved considerably. The newly refurbished site has been heralded by visitors. Quote, during the winter, it was impossible to stand there for more than a few minutes, says Mendel Weiss, a visitor from New York. Quote, but now, thanks to the generous help of Muli and Stacy Cohen, we can spend hours at the site at any time of day or any season of the year. A new synagogue and study facility have been built in the cemetery recently, and new lines of electricity have been installed to enable lights and electricity for the comfort of those who visit. Quote, I feel very lucky to be involved in such a valuable project, and I'm looking forward to more opportunities related to the preservation of the ancient and important sites in the future, says Mr. Muli Cohen. Since the improvements, the number of visitors has increased, and those who do visit are spending longer hours in prayer and meditation as they enjoy the modern services and facilities. So yeah, if you're wondering how Chabad Lubavitch gets their money, look no further than this guy, or for that matter, Trump's son-in-law, or Trump, for that matter. In fact, I'm a little surprised Trump didn't pardon this guy. Maybe he will this term. Maybe he will this term. So as I said, the House of Cards was beginning to crumble. The Pajit in charge of Vanguard was becoming increasingly suspicious, but also more panicked. Because it turns out the whole stereotype of the scammy Indian, let's just, suffice it to say, stereotypes exist for a reason. And apparently, even though he was unwittingly part of a larger scam, he was kind of skimming. So he would go to donors for, you know, like Danny Glover and those types that were giving money to Vanguard that he was then supposed to pass on to Mooley, and he was skimming a little bit off the top. He was skimming a little off the top, and he thought, well, it's not a big deal because once we get the payoff from this Microsoft deal that's totally going to happen, I'll be able to just embezzle money to pay off the money that I'm skimming off the top, and no one will really notice because it'll be so much fucking money. Everyone's going to be happy. It'll be fine. He was trying to live like a king. He was paying the driver to drive him around. He was staying at fancy hotels and getting hookers and, you know, wine and dining these hookers. Like, you know, like what would you expect a Pajit to do when he gets millions of dollars? He was doing that, right? But the problem was Vanguard was $2 million in debt. Vanguard, this foundation, who was committed to all of these nonprofits, they had already committed to paying out all these grants that they had awarded to all these nonprofits, and they didn't have the money. And so this guy was running out of money to steal. I mean, he didn't have money to skim anymore. So he had bills he had to pay. He couldn't pay out the grants they had awarded. And so what is a Pajit to do in this situation? He had to figure out something quick. Something was clearly up. He didn't know what. But he knew there was one person he could call that could get to the bottom of this.
Lady detective, ammo yama active. Lady detective, ammo yama active. Family troubles be corrective, solution bhale attractive, selective, attentive, creative, suggestive, protective, relative, anabective, non-defective, lovely, highly calculative, lady detective, ammo yamma active. మనిషికు సమస్య ఇంటి ఇంటికు సమస్య పాడవాడకు సమస్య ప్రపంచమే ఓ సమస్య సమస్య లేని స్థలమే లేదు సమస్య కానీ సంగతి లేదు సంగతి ఏంటో శోధిస్తుంది సమస్యలన్నీ సాధిస్తుంది లేటి డిటెక్టివ్ అమ్మో యమ యాక్టివ్ లేటి డిటెక్టివ్.
That's right. All he could do was enlist the help of Lady Detective. Sometimes Lady, sometimes Detective. Lady Detective, or Lady Detective. Sometimes family problem, or Lady Detective. So he calls up Lady Detective. Now, so apparently, he and some of the investors figure out, like, okay, there's clearly a problem here. There's clearly a problem here. They apparently get a hold of someone at Microsoft. And they're like, okay, when are you guys going to buy eCast? We know about the deal, and we know about, like, the problems, but we got to know. We got a lot of money tied up in this. We've been waiting for years, literally years. hook lady detective up here. Oh, lady detective. Sometimes lady, sometimes detective. You know, you got to help us out. You got to help us out. And the people at Microsoft said, oh, yeah, about that. Why would we buy you stupid fucks? Like, why? We're Microsoft. Why would we buy an e-jukebox company that he doesn't even work at, by the way, and that's going out of business because they are infringing on patents? And again, why would we ever buy a jukebox? We're Microsoft. Okay? Like what were you thinking? And Harry Dillon here was like, oh, not good. No, oh, shit. So they went down to with a couple investors. They confronted Mooley. Mooley acted shocked at first and said, well, of course they're going to say that, and tried to lie his way out of it. But then once he realized he wasn't going to be able to lie his way out of it, he then laughed in their faces and said, well, it doesn't matter because it's past the statute of limitations. And then he left. And he immediately, because he was just renting, moved to another mansion in Southern California because he's an idiot. I don't know why he didn't just flee the country at that point. The jig's up. Where he was arrested and convicted on charges of wire fraud and tax fraud and a laundry list of other things. And let's see here. There was an article in the Jerusalem Post that was complaining about it. Times of Israel. A former high-tech executive convicted of defrauding investors of at least $30 million on Monday was given one of the harshest sentences meted out in a white-collar criminal case. This is from May 2nd, 2012. A federal judge in San Francisco sentenced Samuel Mooley Cohen to 22 years in prison. Judge Charles Breyer also set a Thursday hearing to consider fines against Cohen that could total up to $60 million. Prosecutors argued for the lengthy prison term, calling Cohen a congenital liar and serial fraudster. Cohen was convicted of soliciting investments in his digital jukebox company by lying about his success. Prosecutors say his fraud caused the collapse of the Vanguard Public Foundation, a communist nonprofit tied to actors Danny Glover and Harry Belafonte. Cohen's lawyers were planning to appeal his conviction on wire fraud, money laundering, and tax evasion charges. Cohen was convicted of falsely telling investors beginning in 2002 that a company he launched called Ecast, that made electronic jukeboxes for bars, was about to be acquired by Microsoft for some reason. Prosecutors said Cohen kept the scheme going by soliciting more money from victims with complaints that the U.S. than the European regulators were holding up the deal, blah, blah. We already talked about all that. Prosecutors say none of that was true. Instead, they said Cohen used the millions to fund an absurd lifestyle that included helping his wife publish a cookbook called The Kosher Billionaire's Secret Recipe. Prosecutors say Cohen rented a mansion in the wealthy enclave of Belvedere just north of San Francisco and decorated the house with copies of famous paintings from Picasso, Miro, and Matisse, and other noted artists. But prosecutors said he solicited investments during the parties at his house, which he told victims he owned while showing them the artwork he claimed were originals. Prosecutors said that was all part of the ruse to portray himself as a wealthy and savvy businessman. The government asked for a sentence of 30 years to life. Similar, this is what's funny, because we did a stream on this guy too. Similar to what originally was talked about, but was not asked for Shalom Rabishkin. Another scammy Jew. Another fucking scammy Jew. Oh my God. This fucking guy. This was the guy that In fact, I think it's called, Shalom Edition or something like that. We talked about this guy. Trump pardoned this guy, but this was another Chabad Lubavitch scam guy, another scam Jew. And that's why I'm a little surprised that Trump didn't pardon this guy. Cohen was convicted on many fewer counts than Shalom Rubishkin, and unlike Rubishkin, he did not head a conspiracy to defraud according to the law, a factor that upped Rubishkin's sentence considerably. Well, it doesn't matter because Rubishkin only did 8 years before Trump let him out. Cohen was charged with 3 counts of tax fraud, which added to his sentence. Rubishkin's sentence ranged, according to guidelines, was 22 to 30 years. He got 25 and had 2 more added for perjuring himself in court. Cohen, 53, is the son of Russian immigrants who, again, East European Jews, man, who was raised in Jerusalem. He moved to the United States in 1987, became a United States citizen, though prosecutors allege he falsely told victims the first President Bush personally granted him citizenship. And that's what we went over in the very beginning of the stream. It's a little muddy. It is a little unusual. Where did this guy come from? I know that just because he was in the IDF doesn't really mean anything, because if you're from Israel, you're in the IDF, right? I get it. But it's a little weird. A little weird that he just shows up, especially his backstory doesn't really add up. His backstory is he's this poor Russian immigrant in Israel who lives in a one-bedroom apartment with his parents, serves in the IDF, and then starts being CEO at tech companies in the 90s, like in America. It doesn't make any sense. And then they start acting like here's the thing. It's hard to know if he was lying to everyone about how he was involved with all these different tech companies, some of which, for example, the whole weird Maxwell Teva pharmaceutical connections, is that real, or is that part of his scam, or is it part of a cover-up to say, was he part of something else? I don't know. And maybe we'll never know. Or maybe Trump will pardon him like he has other Jewish scammers who have the same kinds of associates. Little odd that he built a synagogue at the Rebbe's grave in Ukraine and, you know, redid the whole facility there. That wasn't cheap. And like I said, a little weird that that's not mentioned anywhere. It's not mentioned in the Times of Israel article. It's not mentioned in any of the documentaries about it. It's not mentioned, I found it on accident. I found it because I was looking for photos of him. And one of the image, you know, when you're doing image searches, it'll tell you the name of the page that the picture's on. And I just saw that headline. I was like, what? And I went, I was like, holy shit, better save this, this one. So, yeah. So anyway, multiculturalism working in her, it's the American dream, right? It's the American dream. Getting the best and brightest people from all over the world, whether they're from Israel or they're from Pajitistan, and, you know, bringing them to Silicon Valley where they can defraud people of millions and millions of dollars. It's the American dream. The American dream. Good thing that we can get high IQ immigrants like Harry Dillon and Muli Cohen, right?
But Muli Cohen is working on it.
Muli Cohen is working on it. Muli Cohen is working on it. Come on, be my lover. You will be my lender. Let me be
right. And with that, let's go to let's go to Hyperchance. Oh, good Lord. Check out Odyssey first here. All right, scroll up. Serbian Bull says, what better place for blackpilled than whitepilled.tv? Like I said, it sounds like a contradiction. I'm not saying it's a bad place. I'm just saying, if you're talking about the name only, it does sound like a contradiction. Like I said last time, I'm happy with where I'm at now, but who knows? Things can change. We'll have to see if it continues to be a hospitable place here on Odyssey and Rumble for that. I just want to go to where the people are. Purple Sage. Purple Sage, thank you very much for your work, Devin. Please reprint your book in 2025. A physical copy would be great. Well, I'll tell you what. I will make that happen. I will make that commitment. That will happen. And thank you for the support there. Jesse Poe Holiday says, you hit the nail on the head on one of your recent streams, the infiltration of Jewish feminine neuroticism in the media. I have children and have refused to allow them to watch cartoons or any TV because I've noticed kids in my lifetime act insane, all due to what they watch. They copy their favorite characters from popular media by repeating stupid catchphrases and acting nuts. It teaches them to be reactive and neurotic. No longer are the kids shown strong stoic heroes. The spurgy and weak are venerated. Teach your kids stoicism and avoid media. Great work lately, man. Well, absolutely. And in fact, that is another project of mine that I hope to have done also in 2025, an extensive analysis of the effects that Jewish fiction has on people. Let me just put that's maybe not the best way to describe it, but it's along those lines. And don't go asking me what's going to come out all the time, because I just have the outline. It's right now. It's a twinkle in my eye. That's all. It could be years. I'm going to just say it that way. John Skywalker says, "Is it immoral of me to slightly hope some of the more brainwashed white Zionist Christians who won't listen to reason die in Israel in the next Middle East war? I'm sick of arguing with them, some of my own family. Would it be better for us if the more foolish of our people were just selected out?" Well, I think it's just inevitable it's going to happen anyway, right? Luckily, it's not as... Look, it was pretty universal, I would say, especially post 9/11. The kind of Jewish dick-sucking that you see in these hyper-Zionist Christians in Trump's administration, as an example, that was par for the course for every right-leaning person, I would say, or, you know, the vast majority of Republican voters, we'll just say, in the 1990s and beyond. It really wasn't until fairly recently that people on the right, at least, other than, you know, some notable outliers, you know, like, you know, the David Duke types of the world back then, that really, it was very unusual for people on the right to question the phrase "Israel is our greatest ally," as an example, and you'd be hard pressed to find any mainstream, and by that I mean talk radio, Fox News, National Review, like any kind of publication that the average conservative would be exposed to, or even in mainstream media, and that includes obviously even like leftist media. You'd be hard pressed to encounter anything that wasn't sucking off Israel all the time. So that is a relatively new development, and I suspect that that will become generational, provided enough anti-Semites teach their kids, you know, this sort of thing, and don't trust them to be raised by neurotic Jewish television. Chosen Jawa says, in Mark Time's new book titled The Heirs of Abraham, he points out the fact that God promised to curse the Israelites with perpetual paranoia, neuroticism, and a love of all things evil and subversive if they chose to rebel against him. Well, there you go. I mean, it seems to be a timeless description. You can look at people discussing Jewish behavior, even just in America, around the turn, over 100 years ago, the police chief, most notably the police chief of New York City, describes Jewish behavior in the same way that, well, that we would today. Chosen Jawa again says, Devin, what are your thoughts about people using, I don't know what that one is, fenbendazole something, and ivermectin to cure their cancer? I'm hearing a lot of success stories, even IRL. I'd heard people talk about ivermectin in cancer, but I don't. I heard that during like the COVID stuff when everyone was talking about ivermectin. I think when I was researching it myself to see if I should buy some horse paste or you know whatever and keep it in the fridge just in case, I came across some videos that were independent of COVID. It was cancer patients that were experimenting with it. I don't know. I'm not like a doctor person. I don't know enough about the topic. I don't even know what the fenbend whatever thing is. Donald Ducktator. Donald Ducktator, hello, Devin. Have you ever considered joining in on a Twitter space? Handsome Truth and the gang host a space called 1488 Radio. They run a tight ship and would probably love to have you as a guest. I mean, I don't know. I'm not against going on Twitter spaces. I usually don't know when they're going on, and I don't know if I happen to come across, I pop in them sometimes. I almost never say anything because it's usually what it is, I'm scrolling on my phone and I'm like, oh, I know who those people are. Like, and that's the extent of it. I'm just like, I go and listen. And then like, I put it back in my phone in my pocket and I'm listening as I'm doing stuff. But yeah, I don't have anything against the format. I wouldn't mind popping in maybe sometime, but the timing hasn't worked out. But thank you for the support there, Donald Ducktator. Graham Playing Games says, I respect Jared Taylor. He is willing to speak with anyone, even creepy subversives like Richard Hanania. He probably shouldn't have spoken with him, but I don't like that people are shitting on Jared Taylor for that discussion, claiming he is ingenuine. Taylor is obviously pro-white and has done so much. Well, I know that that conversation took place. I haven't had time to watch it personally. I saw that people were criticizing it, but I haven't even seen the clips. It's a weird person he's just a weird person. Hanania, right? Like he just has like, it's like if you asked AI to make the creepiest face that still look kind of human, I feel like it would look like him. I mean, he has the most unfortunate genetics. Like, there's no way he's ever been laid unless he's a rapist. Let me just put that. There's no way a woman of sound mind and body has ever willingly been with that guy in a room alone. And you can kind of tell, he tweets out like serial killer shit too, where it's like, I mean, I already kind of thought you'd killed someone before this tweet, and now it's just more of how many women are buried in your backyard exactly. So yeah, I don't know. That said, I don't know how that conversation went down. Jared Taylor is a mixed bag, you know, like obviously everyone's got a fondness for him for being the guy that was pro-white for when literally nobody else was. I mean, we've played a lot of his clips going back to like the 80s and 90s. And just being an advocate, a steady advocate for white people, despite his unwillingness to discuss, I think, a key ingredient of white genocide, obviously, which is the Jewish question. I don't know what his motivations for avoiding that are. I've heard rumors, but I don't know. I've heard people suggest, you know, certain things, and I don't know. I've never talked. I would talk to him. And ask him, I guess. I've heard him asked point blank recently. He seems less avoidant on the topic than I would have expected. Like, I think, as an example, I was watching, I think, his millennial interview, and someone asked him, you know, why don't you talk about Jews, essentially? And I think his answer was sufficient for someone that, I mean, it didn't sound like he was dodging it, but obviously he was unwilling to discuss the topic in the way that you and I would discuss it. And it is what it is. My guess is there's some kind of personal reason. And whether that's family related, funding related, I don't know, but I would suggest that's probably there's got to be something like that, which is why, in my personal view, if you want to be a leader and you want to really be able to help white people get through to the other side of what's coming here, you can't allow yourself to be involved romantically, certainly, or financially, or, you know, really beyond casually with Jews, because it's such a key ingredient to white genocide. I mean, you can't expose yourself to that. I mean, that's kind of the whole issue, right? I mean, not the whole issue, but that's a big fucking part of the issue, is white's exposure to Jews. And so it's like, I don't know. I think you guys get it, and I think that a lot of people get it when it comes to Jared Taylor. They understand that that's just not something he's going to talk about, but I would also be loath to throw the baby out with the bathwater, and I think most people are when it comes to Jared Taylor. But again, I haven't seen this specific interview. Maybe he says some egregious shit that I'm not aware of. Zazzy McTazbot says, I was at the store and saw propolis for sale in the cold and flu section. Is that what bees cap the honey cell with? Why is it good for me? And what is the difference between honey and royal jelly? Is royal jelly altogether different, or is it just condensed honey or something? Well, you're about to hear some gross shit. All right. Propolis is bee glue. It's what they glue. Well, they glue everything in the hive together with it. So when I go and take a honey box, or even just the lid off of the hive, the reason why I have to use a hive tool that looks like a pry bar, like you'll see, or maybe I'll bring a picture up. Why not? Let's do bee fun. All right, hive tool. All right. This is like the cheapest Chinese-y hive tool that everyone has like a billion of these things because they cost like $3. Let me pop it up. Here we go. So this is your standard hive tool. And the reason why you need that is you have to ram that into the cracks between the boxes and pry them apart because they've been essentially glued together. And the glue that the bees use is propolis. Some people think that it has antiviral properties. Some people think that it's part of what keeps the ecosystem within the beehive healthy. There are even companies because bees will coat any surface within the hive that's not smooth. Not any surface, but most any rough surface, any surface that's got like if it's wood, if it's splintery, they'll coat it with propolis. There's people that think that that's because it's got some kind of magical properties. I think it's because they don't want to get injured. They want to smooth out that surface. And so that's why they smooth it out because that's all they're really doing. Right. But there are people that think it's awesome. And I don't know, maybe I don't know what studies have been done that really conclusively prove that. I don't think there are any, or certainly not any big ones. But there are people that believe that it's healthy for you. Now, royal jelly is really gross. Royal jelly is what they... Okay, so this is kind of weird, too. The different... Every bee you see, or at least almost every bee you see, is female. So the worker bees... Well, any bee with a stinger is female. They have male bees too, but they only exist to mate, and that's literally their only purpose. They don't go to flowers and collect nectar or anything like that. They don't work. They just eat honey all day, and then when they smell a virgin queen flying around outside, they go and mate with her and then die immediately. So that's all they do. That's all they exist for. So any bees that you see, you know, doing bee things, it's mostly all a girl, right? So what's the difference then between like a girl bee and like the one that can, the only one in the entire hive that can lay eggs? And it's really kind of fucking crazy. It's really weird because what happens is there's not like a queen egg and a worker egg. They're all the same egg. The only difference is they decide for, you know, no one knows exactly why they decide or what egg they, you know, what makes them decide this egg and another egg, but they'll decide we need a new queen. Like maybe the queen is sick or old or dies or flies away or whatever, but for, you know, the hive needs a new queen. And so instead of feeding the egg what it feeds all the other thousands possibly in the hive, they feed it a special, jelly, royal jelly. It's like this white goo. It looks like cum. It looks like cum. They fill up a cell with, this cum-like substance, and they make the cell bigger because the queens grow bigger. And just by virtue of the egg hatching into a little larva and eating this cum shit, it like mutates into a queen. Like, I don't know how else to put it. There's something triggered genetically within their body to where they develop ovaries and all this other stuff and become queens. Like they look totally, they take longer to gestate or, you know, in their cocoon. I don't know what you call that process, pupate. And then they come out and, you know, whatever. Again, because it's bees and everyone thinks bees are magical, people think that white cum stuff is some kind of like cure for things. I don't know. It grosses me. I've never tried it. I see it in the hive all the time because, like, you know, if they make a queen, they, you know. And sometimes you don't want them making a queen, right? So you squish the cells with the queen cells that look like they're like these big peanut looking things, and you squish them, and all the cum stuff comes out, and it's like, ugh. So I don't know. There's people that like that shit. I don't know. Maybe at some point in my bee journey, maybe at some point I'll be like, oh, I guess I'll sell. I don't think so. It just doesn't seem like something I'll ever like want to sell. And I don't know that it actually has any benefits beyond just being like, you know, I'm sure like hippie girls that like to say the word journey would love it. But yeah, I would just stick to, look, the pollen stuff makes sense. You'll see people sell bee pollen. And all that is if you ever look at a bee and like on their legs, they have the little pollen baskets, you'll see like a little orange, you know, like blob on their leg. What they're doing is that they fuck with the entrance. So when the bee comes back to the hive, it actually knocks the pollen off their leg. And so they collect it. And so it's just pollen. They'll say, oh, it's bee pollen, but it's not bee pollen. It's pollen that bees got from a flower and then brought back. So there's nothing. Whereas like honey is actually processed by bees. Bee pollen is just pollen. But, you know, at least that's something. I could see wanting pollen. I don't know what you'd use pollen for, unless maybe for allergies or something like that. But, you know, at least that's not gross to me. It seems like too much work. I don't want to do that either. But, you know, yeah, beekeepers are creative when it comes to marketing whatever they can sell that gets produced in that hive. Okay, let's see here. Graham Playing Games says, I met Taylor at AMREN conference in 2024. I highly recommend anyone who is not a Spurg or a Schizoid, who is pro-white for the continuity of European ethnic nations, to go to the conference. It's at a beautiful resort, and you meet wonderful people. Taylor absolutely deserves honor and respect. So there you go. I've never been. Yeah, it'd be interesting to go. I feel like a lot of them are very optimistic about Trump in a, I think, misguided way. But that, I think that's probably the age group also. But yeah, I've never been. Handsome Sven says, hi, Devin. Keep up the great work. Handsome Truth, myself, and a few others host a Twitter. Man, you guys really doing this Twitter space stuff, huh? Called 1488 Radio every Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday from 1 p.m. to 6 p.m. Pacific time. We'd be honored to have you on as a special guest whenever you have time. Well, maybe, like I said, maybe I'll pop in and say, I've never been in any Twitter space. I mean, I've listened to them before, but I've been a listener, I guess, in them, but I've never spoken. I don't know. It feels like it wouldn't be too bad. Like it just seems kind of casual, right? So maybe I'll pop in. You know, I'll keep that in mind. But yeah, thanks for the thanks for the invite. You know, like I said, if I have time, and that's, I'm usually awake during that time, and that's pretty long. That's a pretty big block, 1 to 6 p.m. So maybe I could pop in for a little bit there. Fuzzy Teeth says, hey, Devin, I recently found the documentary from 1989 covering contemporary music of the 70s and 80s and its connections to Satanism, promoting moral degeneracy. The tape comes from a Christian viewpoint, and I think it would make an interesting stream. I might have seen it. I think I know what you're talking about, in fact. But I'll check it out. There's a whole series of these videos, I think, that you've discovered, where they really look at satanic. Look, this is where, you know, people will say, oh, satanic panic. No, there really was like some Satan shit going on in the 80s. And I think some Christians took it too far and they did overreact. But then again, it's like, I kind of wish they were overreacting now, right? Like I think overreacting and fighting against evil shit in the culture is a lot better than underreacting. But unfortunately it did kind of, because of some of the overreaction, it's like, you know, they'll talk about, you'll hear people, and remember the 90s, all the potheads knew what reefer madness was because it was this over the top, like, oh, if you smoke a joint, you're going to freak out and kill your family. Like it was comical. In fact, people used to get high and then watch Reefer Madness because it was just ridiculous. Because that's not what happened when you got high. And you could tell whoever made it was just making it to like freak people out that didn't know anything about it. Some of this stuff, this Christian response to the evil in the media, kind of played like that. It kind of came across like that. And it really kind of, unfortunately, created an environment in the 90s, especially, where it made it to where it was very mockable. It was very mockable. And because that seemed to be the favorite weapon of our enemies, you know, think about like Jews like John Leibowitz, a.k.a. Jon Stewart of The Daily Show. All that is just, you know, the constant mocking of conservative right-wing people, specifically Christians and stuff. And it was just fodder for these people. And so that's my criticism of some of that stuff, because there is a lot of it. And some of it's kind of, it is a little dopey, but some of it in retrospect actually isn't as dopey as it might have seemed in the 90s. Watch the Collapse says, do whatever you can to help your folk in your community, strangers, homeless, whoever it is, whenever you can. The small acts of kindness really add up. White unity at every opportunity, as the only solution is white revolution. Hail Devin, hail Chat, and hail Hitler, bitch. Well, I don't know. Do I get in trouble for saying Heil Hitler? I can say Heil. I play the thing all usually, but I'll still say it. Whatever. Appreciate your hard work. I'm not going to get in trouble for that. I said nigger kike tonight. all right, let's see here. Where are we at? It just updated. Hang on a sec. There we are. Watch the Collapse says, retarded faggot. Yeah, retarded faggot. We don't know what happened to him. Brody says, hi, Devin. Do you think Elon Musk ever listens to your streams? I doubt it. Is it outside of the realm of possibility? No. I only say that because I know he's read my tweets before, because I've ratioed him to some, or I don't know if I've ratioed him like actually like ratioed, but like I've gotten enough likes, like 15,000 plus likes on replies to him, to where if he pays attention at all, he has at least looked to see who I was, right? That's what I would do. And whether that means he's listened to a stream, I mean, I don't know. I feel like he's probably too busy for that. But then again, isn't he like playing Diablo or whatever, like 40 hours a week? So maybe he's not too busy for that. Maybe he's listening to the Insomnia stream while he plays Diablo or whatever. Isn't that the game he plays all the time? Blue Cord. Blue Cord. Good evening, Mr. Stack. Well, good evening to you. Judy Stroyer says, hi, Devin. Did you know that Tiny Israel has the largest skin bank in the world? Organ donation is not allowed in Judaism or Islam. So where or how are they getting all of that human skin? That's a good question. That is a good question. Part of me doesn't want to know the answer to that. Look, you had that Mooley Cohen working with blind kids, right? Maybe it's coming from NorCal blind kids. Chestnut with the big dono.
Pull yourself out.
Holy fuck.
I'm thinking, Max.
All right. Chestnut with a big dono. Thank you for what you do, Devin. My friends and I are seeking like-minded black-pilled men in the North Georgia area to get together in real life and build community. If this is allowed, can you share my email? Well, I mean, you've already done that. It says, I'll go ahead and read it. I don't know why I wouldn't. John at RUGGIERI.me for making contact. Now, I will say this. It's not an endorsement if this guy ends up being a Fed. That's at your own risk. Or, conversely, if, John, you get contacted by Feds, I wash my hands of it. But, yeah, I mean, look, as I've said before, just you got to be aware that that obviously there are Feds out there. No communications are private, especially not email. And just be aware of that. And if someone says, let's do this illegal shit, then run the other way, because either they are Feds or they're going to get busted by Feds and drag you down with them. So that's, you know, just be aware of that. I think outside of that, there is a place for meeting people IRL and whatnot. Just, you know, be aware of the obvious. And yeah, or be aware that some people are some people on the internet are just kind of weirdos. So just be aware of that. But yeah, there you go. I wish you guys luck. Hopefully, good things happen with that. And thanks for the support there. Love and division. Love and division. Wow, never trust a Cohen. By the way, I have a close friend that just became a millionaire with $10,000 in investment in SPX 69, whatever that is, aka the next Bitcoin. Devin, have you seen the doc The Last Whites of the East End London or the doc Empire of Dust? I have not, but I will add those to my squirrely notes here. There we go. All right. Thank you for the support there. Love and division. My fat little retarded toe. My fat little retarded toe. Thank you for another great stream. I shall be partial replay gang as I drive tomorrow. Unfortunately, I won't be stopping at the grocery store. Also, Montana guy for the last stream, or from the last stream. And anyone else in the area, you can DM me at Lieutenant6789 on Twitter. We have good guys all over the state. And as always, hi, Mom. Well, there you go. Look at that. See? Again, I'm not against meeting up. Just proceed with caution. And you might end up meeting some lifelong friends. Or not lifelong friends. practice an appropriate amount of caution. Evergreen Dream, I recently learned that a man named Moti Schneiberg tried to trademark the name September 11, 2001, the day of the terrorist attacks. Speaking of which, will you ever do a deep dive on that subject? I have heard that. And as far as doing like a full-on deep dive, I mean, I don't know. There have been other people that have done a really thorough job on that. I feel like I would just be kind of regurgitating a lot of their work. Doesn't mean that I'm against it. And maybe someday on a 9/11 will fall on a stream day and I'll have the time to maybe condense it. It's just, there's so much. It's one of those things that you can't really, like, you're going to leave stuff out, especially unless the stream's like 8 hours long. There's a reason why, like, Ryan Dawson, as an example, has those really, 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 really long documentaries. about 9/11, because it's like it sort of needs to be that long to get, or I don't know, maybe it doesn't. Maybe I could condense it down a little bit better, for because that's the other problem too, is his delivery is kind of, well, let's just be nice and say it's very dry, and it's not for everybody. So maybe I could spice it up a little bit. I don't know. But I've kind of stayed away from it just because I feel like there's other people that have done a good job on that. Wah says, thank you for your hard work, Devin. Finally got my old man to start coming around. Baby steps. Thoughts on the California fires. Fun fact, Stuart Resnick, billionaire Jew, owns the rights to 60% of the water in California. Something's fucky. Yeah, I feel like there might be something that's screwed up with that, but it might just be as simple as welcome to America. Now that we are diverse, that this is the kind of thing that just starts happening. It doesn't have to be some squirrely conspiracy theory. It can just be wild graft and mismanagement. Like, it doesn't have to actually be for some bigger purpose. In fact, maybe that's a white way of thinking of things, because we do plan stuff that we think that when big significant things happen, that it has to be something coordinated, because it's the kind of thing that's how our brains work. But a lot of times it's not how the brains of, you know, black lesbians work. And you get enough of those on the payroll in city and state government. And, you know, it's just a phenomenal amount of scamming shit. Like I said, it could just be people scamming the system, grifting and grafting, getting payoffs from billionaires and incompetence. And it's the kind of shit you would see if you went to India, right? When you see India, and there's just trash everywhere and everything just seems like a clusterfuck and it's just this noisy fucking hellhole, that's where we're going. You know, that's where we're headed. And so don't be surprised when basic services kind of just break down and everything's shit. It doesn't have to be like some, oh, they planned it, they wanted it to be bad. It's like, well, I mean, maybe, but maybe it's just everyone sucks now. It could just be that. Let's see here. J-Ray 1981, we are holding up my wife's very good friends and family who lost her house in the fire. What's your take on that situation? Well, you just, someone just asked, but yeah, I think it's right now, it's too early to know, but I think that it stinks of, unfortunately, garden variety, you know, communism, basically. You know, diversity plus communism equals this sort of, you know, disasters, you know, is what happens. Michael Hadson. Ah, oh. Michael Hadson says, hello, Devin. I wanted to say Merry Christmas and Happy New Year from Australia. Better late than never. I appreciate your content a lot. I wish I had $500,000. As do I. As do I. Well, hello and Merry Christmas. It's always awesome to hear there's people on the other side of the planet. I've actually talked to people in Australia on ham radio before, and it's easier to get New Zealand, but I have talked to Australia. That's quite the haul. That's quite the haul. But just goes to show, with zero infrastructure. In fact, I'm pretty sure the guy I talked to in Australia last, I think he was in a boat. I think I talked to some guy in a fucking boat. Goes to show how, and he was just running, like, yeah, he's in a boat. So I think he was just running 100 watts. So goes to show what you can do with a long wire and a boat, apparently. But yeah, thanks for the support there. J-Ray 1981. Isn't it funny how these high-class billionaire pedos really love that kind of art? Yeah, you know, isn't it funny how Jews and the modern art kind of goes hand in hand, right? And those price tags, it's money laundering. It's money laundering. Corn Pop, the bad dude, with a big dono. All right. Doesn't it feel good to be hated? To have your enemy sabotage your existence by pulling every lever at its disposal for millennia because they can't fathom you being better than them? And yet here you are. You persevere. Doesn't it feel good to be hated, Goy? Oh, I don't know if it feels good to be hated, but I'll tell you what. I just think that it feels... It's invigorating. It's invigorating to be challenged. Let me put it that way. And I don't mind being, and some people mind being, there are, you know, weirdly, a lot of people don't like to feel like there's people out there that hate them. I think women specifically don't like that, you know, but a lot of men too. They don't like, it hurts their psychology when they're people pleasers, you know. I have never, well, I don't want to say never. I think maybe when you're a teenager in high school, you care what people think about you like a lot more than normal. Because that's just, I don't know why. I wonder if there's like an evolutionary advantage to that, right? Like for, you know, like specifically at that age. Because it does seem to increase, right? Because when you're a kid, you kind of don't, maybe you're just not really aware. Maybe just because you're a kid, you got kid brain. You can't really, you know, really articulate. But then again, I don't know, kids seem to like really not give a shit what anyone thinks about them, right? Like kids seem totally oblivious to that. Like in fact, to the extent where there's even like TV shows, like kids say the darndest things, right? Like, 'cause they don't care. They'll just say like really impolite, you know, honest shit and not care. Or they'll just like, you know, if they don't get what they want, they'll just throw a tantrum and pee their pants and, and then they don't care. And then for some reason you get like hyper aware of what other people think of you. It doesn't mean you hyper care, but you get hyper aware, I think, as a teenager. And then it kind of wears off, or, you know, people take it different directions. I think probably, I mean, I probably cared a little bit, probably less than, I don't want to say less than most, maybe, but certainly not more than most. But yeah, these days I don't give a fuck at all at all. I, you know what it is? If you're confident that you're doing what you're supposed to be doing, then that's all that matters. That's really all that matters. And I think that's really, maybe that's what it is. It's people that they're not confident that they're doing what they're supposed to be doing. And so it's like an element of, they feel like that it's almost like they're having to put on like a fake or play the part of like a character. 'Cause they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing, but they need people to think that they are so they can like sleep at night. And it's, so they live under this like constant fear of being exposed, or I don't know. Maybe I'm overthinking this. But anyway, Dank Tank says, thank you for all your work. Have you ever heard of the Lifeline Expedition? It started in the 1990s in the UK. It was white people, including children, visiting former slave ports wearing yokes and chains and apologizing for slavery. Holy shit. No, but I will add that to my notes. I mean, I've seen things like that, but I haven't heard of that specifically. Man of low moral fiber says Jews would gladly spend $1 million, well, you say $999,999 to scam someone out of $1 million. You know, an easier way of putting that would have been spend $1 million to scam someone out of $1,001,000. They're in it for the thrill and joy they derive from harming others financially. It's hard to not see that there might be something there to what you're saying. It just seems like way too common of a behavior for it to not be something that's being rewarded with dopamine, you know, in a way that we don't necessarily understand. Severely retarded faggot says this channel is turning into History Channel. Well, hopefully not in a bad way. Scottish American jerk. Scottish American jerk says, one last point from the last stream. Christianity requires the worship of a Jew. How can we survive that way? It's much healthier to worship deities who share our bloodlines, Norse, Celtic, Slavic, etc. It won't fix everything, but it's needed. May the gods bless you and yours, Hel Dagda and Hel Danu, which I'm assuming are some kind of pagan thing. I mean, I don't know. I get what you're saying, and I think that a lot of even Christians get what you're saying. It's just, you know, it's more complicated than that. That's the best I can do in a super chat right now. I know it's a little underwhelming, but it is more complicated than that. Man of low moral fiber says, in the same vein as S. Francisco and Xmas, Jews don't use the traditional plus symbol. Instead, they use an inverted capital T, which is, and the other thing, because the traditional one looks like a cross and makes them mad. I sincerely don't know how anyone does or doesn't hate them. Well, that's where the word kike comes from, right? Is they wouldn't, because it means, what, doesn't it mean cross? And what, hold on, I forgot what that was. Hang on. It has to do with Ellis Island. When they would come in to America. Yeah, so it means, here we go. After searching many sources, I found out that the Jewish people on Ellis Island signed with a zero, so they would write a circle instead of an X because of the relevance towards Christianity. So when they would go and check things off, or I guess if they didn't know how to write, you know, people would say, make your mark, and you would just literally just put an X if you didn't know how to write your name. I guess Jews, they didn't like putting an X because it looked too much like a cross, and so they would draw a circle. And apparently, circle is a kikel, like that was the name of it. And so that's why they started calling them kikes. Like that's where it comes from. Suzuki Samurai says, times are hard right now, but here's a dollar from a tired rail worker and another for retarded faggot. Well, I appreciate that. And look, that's, nothing to be, worried about. You're doing what you can, and I appreciate that. Prairie dog. All right, Prairie Dog. Schedule change has put me on replay, gang. I was in Central America last week, and I noticed that all non-white countries, the rule is you shit on others or they shit on you. No one thinks for a second. I don't like being shit on, so I won't do it to others. These people cannot be assimilated. Yeah, well, it's like if you're not scamming someone else, you're getting scammed, right? Like that's how a lot of people in India feel. It's just most third world countries. Either you're scamming someone else or you're getting scammed. That's pretty much how they view the world. And that's pretty much how it is, you know. And that's, you know, that's unfortunately a lot more of that will manifest in America. And a lot of it already has. Occidental Front says, hey, China, here's a free tip. Get the Insomnia streams translated into Chinese word for word to propagandize your population about how corrupt and pathetic the West is. I don't know if you're trying to make a point that, like, I'm Chinese propaganda. I would say it would be a good warning, though. Like, if you're the Chinese and you don't want the same thing to happen to you. Although I don't see the Chinese as my ally, so I'd prefer they don't look at the warnings. Thin Red Line. Thank you, Devin. I think he meant thank you, Devin, for all you do. Well, I appreciate that. White Pilled says, for retarded faggot, and a moment of mention for those affected by California's continuing failures as a state. There you go. A lowly scribe in God's army says, Tandy never gets any credit. Great show as always. I think you're talking about the computers, huh? The Tandy computers. I wanted one when I was a kid, but they were on their way out pretty much as I was a kid. Like, it was already, like, not a thing. It was, but I'm trying to remember if, my cousin had one or something like that. We had some shitty Apple II, because my mom's dad, my grandpa, got one for free, and then he got, like, a better Apple, and then he gave us the Apple II when it was already, like, you know, ancient. But, which is probably why I thought a Tandy was nice. Bessemer 72. Hi, Devin. I hope none of us get Jude. Thanks for shedding light on these swindlers. That poor father-in-law. Yeah, well, you know, he raised the daughter who ended up with a Jew. So part of that's on him. If you raise a daughter that marries a billionaire Jew, or, well, not really a billionaire, a scammy Jew who then turns around and scams you. I mean, don't get me wrong. I feel bad for the guy. It's probably out of ignorance more than out of malice on his part, but still, you know, kind of still on him. All right. And we got slavery to false gods. Not just Jews, but the Assyrians, too, were cursed by God to live scattered throughout the globe. Yes, Assyrians still exist. They speak Aramaic and Arabic and tend to look very white. Well, there you go. Friendly Neighborhood Fascist says, Owen Benjamin just on Jake Shield's show and 43 minutes in explains how once you have a Jew on your side, you'll never have a more loyal friend. Jake has his heart in the right place, but took the bait. Owen was oozing the entire time. Slippery fellow. Yeah, well. Yeah, is anyone surprised? Is anyone surprised? I don't think so. Bleak says, a stream on Dr. Spock, the child behavioral expert, not the Star Trek one. Yeah, well, that guy, boomers in the 80s, everyone had that fucking book that he wrote. Would be a fun, very Jewy, although not a Jew. He's not a Jew? Are you sure? Let me see. I thought he was a Jew. Wait, let me finish reading this. Maybe you might read this wrong. Would be fun, Jewy, although not a Jew. Boomers took lots of advice from him. Did you go to Nob? I don't know what that means. Propolis has been tested now on viruses. The herpes virus specifically has showed positive effects. But look, I don't know. Maybe to me it's bee glue. Maybe if the research comes in and it's worth something. Propolis doesn't gross me out. Royal jelly kind of grosses me out. Dr. Spock, let's see here. Is it Benjamin? His name's Benjamin. He's got to be a Jew. Hang on. Let me see. Dr. Spock was an American pediatrician and left-wing political activist. Blah, 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 blah. Where's his early life? Benjamin McLean Spock was born May 2nd, 1903, blah, blah, blah. Family had Dutch origin. Maybe he's not Jewish. Blah, 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 blah. I'm not seeing Jewish. Maybe he's not Jewish. I've never done a thing on him. I just remember the book. My parents had, like, the book that ever, I don't know what book, I don't remember the name of it, But the book that everyone fucking had. Well, hold on. We're here. Let me see what he says on circumcision. He favored circumcision. Says in the 1940s, Spock favored circumcision of males performed within a few days of birth. However, in the 1976 revision of baby and child care, he concurred with a 1971 American Academy of Pediatrics task force that there was no medical reason to recommend a routine. So, oh, maybe he switched then. Well, he's definitely not Jewish then. And in 1989 article for Red Book, he stated that circumcision of males is traumatic, painful, and questionable value. Well, he's definitely not Jewish then. He received the first human rights award from the International Symposium on Circumcision in 1991 and was quoted as saying, quote, "My own preference, if I had the good fortune to have another son, would be to leave his little penis alone." Okay, well. Maybe I'll look into that further, but I just assumed for some reason he doesn't really look, well, he looks like he could be Jewish, but I guess he looks Dutch. I don't know. That might be worth looking into. He did influence a lot of fucking boomers though on how they raised their children. Chosen Jawa. Chosen Jawa in AD 70, General Titus destroyed Jerusalem completely, even digging up the 450-foot deep temple foundation. Years later, Hadrian crushed the Bar Kokhba revolt. Then in about the 2nd or 3rd century, another attempt was made to rebuild the temple, but all the labor and supplies were suddenly destroyed. I'm talking about building the 3rd temple. In unexpected disasters, since Israel has been a nation for 76 years, why does it seem like they are delaying regarding their wish to rebuild the temple? Seems like the end of the Six-Day War in 67 would have been the best time to act. What are they waiting for or waiting on? They've had a Sanhedrin for years now. I don't know. I don't pretend to understand their mumbo jumbo shit. You know, maybe they're waiting for like the perfect red heifer or something like, you know, or maybe, you know, some other prophetic thing that has to happen. Or maybe they have to finish the tunnels they're building under the mosque or whatever. The Dome on the Rock. Man of low moral fiber says a theory gaining traction is that Elon is paying someone or multiple people to grind and boost his accounts for him. He's really a weird guy who thinks paying someone to do something meant that he did it. Not that being a top player in a game is a good thing, but he brags about it nonetheless. Empire of Dust is the one that he has. The Chinaman sitting in a small room making fun of the African guy for letting all the European infrastructure fall into a state of disrepair. You've surely seen the clip of that on 4chan. I haven't seen that clip, actually. I haven't been on 4chan lately. I've been doing so many IRL things lately. I haven't been on the internet as much as I usually am. I guess that would make sense. I could see Elon paying some foreign, you know, basically the video game version of an H-1B1 visa guy to do it and then to rationalize in his head that he's doing it in the same way that Steve Jobs rationalized that he invented the iPhone. I mean, that's how those people are, right? That's how those people are. They don't actually do anything themselves, but they, well, I had the idea to do it, so that means I did it. It's like, well, does it mean that? Friendly Neighborhood Fascist says, fun fact, the word swindler is said to have been introduced into London by German Jews around 1762, according to Etymonline. Nice little funny word game they did there. Yeah, that would make sense. I mean, it sounds like a German word or a what's their stupid language? The German Jews, the Yiddish. Drain the Zogbog, says Devin. Have you looked into El Sayed Nosair? He was the killer of Mir Kaihan of the JDL and was later connected to the first World Trade Center bombing. He was represented by big Jew lawyer William Kunstler and later another Jew. No, I have not looked into him, but I will also add that to my notes. Funkin' Android! All right, Funkin' Android says, what is your opinion on LD Amin? He was briefly alluded to in the last stream. For whatever reason, he thought it was necessary to rid his country of Indians, many of which ended up in the UK. Seems like he's got a bad rap. Google his son, based African J-Pillar. I'm not familiar with him, or the reference, you mean. I mean, I get his name might have come up, but I don't remember the reference. But I will. Well, let me just look it up. Maybe it'll ring a bell if I look him up real quick. Let me see. Where is it? Oh, okay. He was referenced because he showed up in the footage of when they were talking about refugees, right? That's what you're talking about, right? When they were saying that in the documentary, they were like, oh, and sometimes, world events cause more refugees. That's how they're talking about it. They're, what they mean is because of his ridding his country of Indians, those Indians had to go somewhere. And so clearly they had to go to London for some reason. That's what the reference was. And for those who don't know who we're talking about, it's, he was the Ugandan like warlord basically, right? He was the president, of Uganda and got rid of the, here's his name.
Idi Amin Dada Ami.
he's a big black warlord basically, and so probably because he took over, they had a lot of those Indians end up in London. That's probably what the reference was. Slavery to False Gods says worshiping pagan deities is literally slavery to false gods. That inspired this handle. Praise Jesus. Well, there you go. That's a Christian's view. Man of low moral fiber says anyone that supports circumcision or believes in the Holocaust is a practicing Jew, whether they know it or not. Well, I would say there's people that have probably been tricked into both of those things. Increasingly, though, there is, there's no excuse for that now. Like, it's, I guess there's way fewer excuses. There's probably some good people that are still retarded enough to do one of those things. And I wouldn't necessarily qualify them as a Jew because of it, but it is what it is. All right, let's take a look at Rumble. Going over to Rumble now, and we've got... We're going to do the Rumble thing that I always have to do until they can fix their fucking thing. Here we are. Unreconstructed Rebel says, as a man of the South, I would never say the word. Saying nigger is shameful. We in Dixieland understand that saying nigger is just as bad as cracking the whip. I'm glad Jews helped the poor nigger. There you go. There's a little womp womp, I think. Unreconstructed Rebel says Rumble censoring chats is mega gay. Absolutely. Absolutely. But that's also not surprising. Not surprising. I think we all kind of expect that from Rumble. And then Unreconstructed Rebel again with a big dono. Obligatory Southern pride worldwide support from Dixie. Well, I appreciate that. Unreconstructed Rebel with the big support. And then Unreconstructed Rebel proceeds to produce a tower of some sort. some kind of tower seems to be forming in the chat there. I'm not sure exactly what this all means.
Hey, girl. You hungry?
Fuck you, nigga.
All right. Who's Joe? Who's Joe? Who's Joe? A riddle. I'm from a small city in Pennsylvania. I'm currently in Delaware. My job title sounds very important, but I often don't know what's going on, and I'm always sleepy. I love ice cream. Who am I? You know what? I think I know the answer to this. You know the answer to this riddle. And I thought I had a thing, way of, let's see here, is it, oh, I do have it. Hold on. Hold on, why is this not wanting to work? Why is this not want to do what I'm telling it to do? Hang on. Now it'll do it, I think.
We have a lot of other things to cover here, but look to Dr. Sherwood. Are we moving?
Joe Biden, wake up. Joe Biden, wake up. 9/11.
One of the things that I strongly believe is
Joe Biden, wake up.
I should probably go home.
I'm tired.
Joe Biden, wake up.
Joe.
I'm tired.
Joe Biden.
What's happening?
Joe Biden, I've been calling.
What's happening?
Joe.
Hello, Mr. President, wake up.
You should have to pay nearly $6,400 more than you would today.
Wake up.
There you go. All right. We're not going to have very many more opportunities to have that, right? Slowly, that's going to be more and more irrelevant. Oh, where'd the fucking Rumble chat go? I break the Rumble chat somehow. Oh, no, you got to be kidding me. Where'd the Rumble chat go? Oh, I hope I didn't fuck that up. That's going to be a pain in the ass to get through the rest of them. What the fuck? Hang on. Fucking Rumble. Okay, that's not... Oh, no, it's still here. Thank God. All right. Ah! Thought I lost that. I just accidentally flipped the tab over. All right, and we got Unreconstruct the Rebel again. with another big tonneau to finish off his bizarre tower that I don't really quite understand the meaning of it.
Hey, girl. You hungry?
Fuck you, nigga.
You guys are calling yourself niggers.
All right, well, I definitely appreciate that. Unreconstructed Rebel, as always, with the hard R there. Who's Joe? Says, hey, Devin, Happy New Year. You said you lived in D.C. Have you ever been to Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, or Hershey Park? If so, what's your thoughts on them? I don't think that I have. I drove through Pennsylvania a couple of times on my way to other places, but I don't think I actually spent any time in anywhere in Pennsylvania. I went to Philadelphia and a couple times, and I've never actually spent any time. I don't know. I'm having a hard time picturing how rural Harrisburg is, but there's a weird amount of rural. You would, at least I thought there wouldn't be. I don't know why. I thought like the East Coast would just be all urban, and I didn't realize how much of it still existed in some kind of rural form. Even in places like in Virginia, but Maryland, obviously there's the big cities, but there's like weird little pockets of like white rural that were actually quite nice. Who's Joe again? I've been listening to all the old streams, just past ADL files, and someone recommended that you do a stream on the race riots in York, Pennsylvania. It would be a good stream, close to my hometown metro. York, Pennsylvania, huh? I will add that to my notes. It might be on my notes already, but I'll add it again. My notes are a little messy right now. Yeah, that might be worth checking out. That doesn't ring any bells, though. But that's how fun stuff is discovered, right? Race riots in York. I'll just do it. Let me do a quick search and see if anything comes up. 1969. Well, apparently it's big enough. There's a lot of stuff about it. That could be interesting. What was the cause of it? It's always something stupid. It was, it began when a black youth, Takani Sweeney, was shot and hospitalized. This incident followed a series of tensions and protests in the city, including a false claim by a 12-year-old black youth that he was doused with gas. So it's a fake hate crime. A 12-year-old black kid said, they put gasoline on me. And, there we go. And then they shot a cop. Or wait. And then they escalated further when a police officer was shot. Yeah, then they... Okay, so it's literally... It's like nothing changed. It's black people spurging out and acting like they're the victim when they're causing all the problems. So, understood. But that might not be a bad one to check out. Who's Joe says, also got to throw money to you. Money at you to do a stream about a Bronx Tale. Yeah, well, one of these days. All right, I'm scrolling down to see if we got one more here. Who's Joe again? Says, hey, Devin, have you bet on politics? I've made a few thousand from betting on Hegseth and inauguration attendees. I think politically smart people can make decent money from it. I use Kalshi. I have not, other than I have made a bet with someone about mass deportations not happening. Who I think she's going to owe me $200. We'll see. We'll see. We'll see if that unfolds. Scrolling down. Then we got, who's Joe again? There's your devil dogs you wanted there, Who's Joe. All right. And then we got Unreconstructed Rebel. Unreconstructed Rebel says, I work 100 hours a day at the ball-crushing factory for Rabbi Shlomostein. I'm thankful for my tax dollars supporting Israel, MIGA. And sadly, that is only minor hyperbole for people out there. I promise you that. Who's Joe again? Let's see here.
You gotta pull yourself out. Holy fuck.
I'm thinking, Max.
All right. Shout out to Unreconstruct the Rebel, one of the realest niggas and fellow pillbox shill. Well, there you go. We got love going on in the Rumble chat. Who's Joe giving a salute out to Unreconstructed Rebel, the patrons of Rumble there. Then we got Unreconstructed Rebel again. Oh, look at that. We got some gentlemen cheers going back and forth. Unreconstructed Rebel says, Who's Joe cheers? Rumble Clan, greater than Odyssey Tribe. Oh, look at that. We got some, got a little rivalry between the chants. Then, of course, we got Negro Spritzer expressing his severe disappointment in all things non-white. As per usual. All right, and I'll just do one real quick look back at Odyssey, and I think we're good. Let's see here. Did I lose? Okay, did I miss one here? Back. We got one last one. Yeah, looks like we got Handsome Sven says, I wouldn't expect you to hang around the whole 5 hours. But it'd be great to have you on the panel for like an hour or two. Like I said, I'll pop in there. I'm not, I have no problem doing that. I've never done a space, but I'm sure I don't have to use it. I don't think I have to do it on my phone. I think that would annoy me, using my phone. So I'd probably want to do it on my, have like a real microphone. Only because my phone kind of sucks, but I'm sure it's not a big deal. So, all right. All right, guys, I'm going to shut her down for the evening. Appreciate you guys coming out here and for all the generous support as we sit down and learn about the trustworthiness of Israeli Jews. Our favorite Israeli Jews. And with that, I'll bid you guys all good evening. For Blackpilled, I'm, of course, Devin Stagg.
But Mooley Cohen is working on it.
Mooley Cohen is working on it. Mooley Cohen is working on it.